Praise be to Allah. I just imagine that Iran, a majority Muslim country, would find that quite offensive.
Has the president officially lost his marbles as he threatens Iran with attacks on its critical infrastructure in an expletive-laden Truth Social post? Is this a new low for a man seemingly out of control? Later in the hour, we'll look ahead to yet another walkout from resident doctors, which kicks off tomorrow. And finally...
Now I ain't saying she a gold digger, but she ain't messing with no broke. Now I ain't saying she a gold digger,
Pressure grows on Sir Keir Starmer to block Kanye West's visa to stop him performing in the UK. The controversial rapper is due to headline Wireless Festival in Finsbury Park, despite his history of anti-Semitism. Is it time for the government to step in and ban this reprobate?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Iran has warned of a devastating and widespread response if President Trump carries out his threats to hit civilian targets. Mr. Trump has set a new deadline for Tehran to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. He said he would destroy Iran's power plants and bridges if it doesn't comply by tomorrow night. Former Conservative Defence Minister Tobias Elwood says the change indicates the president's position in the conflict is weakening.
He has boxed himself in, given himself very, very little options apart from further utility of military force. And we've seen this in other parts of the world, in our history as well, but that alone will not lead to regime change or indeed your own objectives.
NHS England says people shouldn't be put off seeking care they need during a six-day strike by resident doctors. The walkout is due to begin tomorrow morning. Doctors' Union, the BMA, has called the industrial action in a dispute over jobs and pay with the government. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has described the strike as disappointing. A series of changes to tax and benefits have come into force this morning. It means millions of people receiving universal credit or a state pension will see their payments increase. Most benefits will go up by 3.8% and pensions will increase by 4.8%. The two-child benefit cap has also been scrapped. Financial analyst Danny Hewson has more details for LBC.
So if you have more than two children, you will get, and you claim benefits, you will start to get additional cash. So, for example, a family with three children will get an average rise of about £4,100 a year. So about 480,000 families are set to benefit from this.
Separately, new claimants applying for the Universal Credit Health top-up because they have a disability or are ill will also see changes from today. Under revised regulations, people will be eligible to receive just over £217 a month. That's just over half of what existing claimants get. The drinks company Diageo has joined Pepsi in withdrawing its sponsorship of Wireless Festival after Kanye West was announced as a headliner. Sir Keir Starmer called the booking deeply concerning following the rapper's previous anti-Semitic remarks and use of Nazi imagery. West is due to play three nights at the London event in July. And the four astronauts on NASA's Artemis 2 mission are preparing to fly around the far side of the moon later tonight. The crew will venture deeper into space than any other human before. They won't be able to speak with mission control for around 30 minutes as radio communications will be blocked by the moon itself. LBC weather, a settled day for large parts of the UK, staying dry with sunny spells, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
When we think of Easter, why do our brains go straight to eggs wrapped in foil and not lamb joints resting in foil? Think outside the chalky egg box and enjoy a third off delicious British lamb joints. Cook them low and slow until tender enough to carve with a spoon or roast with a rosemary and lemon thyme infusion. Chocolate eggs are only the beginning. Save a third on all British lamb roasting joints at Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected items in stores subject to availability. Prices may vary in Channel Islands, Little Waitrose and Partners and Concessions. Offer in 6th of April.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good morning. It's 4 minutes past seven. Welcome to Bank Holiday Monday Breakfast. I'm Ian Dale, here with you until 10. Nick Ferrari will be back in his rightful chair this time tomorrow. Now, I try to resist talking about Donald Trump sometimes because I think sometimes the media plays into his hands. We cover every single little thing that he says. But you can't ignore him when he issues an expletive-filled tweet, well, on Truth Social, his own platform, warning to Iran, various warnings to Iran, despite claiming there is a good chance of a peace deal as early as today. Well, if there is a peace deal as early as today, I'll eat my hat, because there is no sign that the Iranians are remotely interested in coming to a deal. They've always denied all along that they're in any discussions with the Americans, and yet Trump constantly repeats that. Now, I can't say two of the words in this social media message that he issued. I will read it out to you, but I can't read the two words, but you'll have to imagine what they are. He says, Tuesday will be power plant day and bridge day, all wrapped up in one in Iran. There will be nothing like it, 3 exclamation marks. Open the effing strait, except he doesn't say effing, he uses the actual word. Open the effing strait, you crazy bees. Insert your own word. Or you'll be living in hell. Just watch, in capital letters. Praise be to Allah, President Donald J. Trump. He didn't say thank you for your attention to this message, which he's given to say. Now, this is the man who holds the office of President of the United States. Now, the American media in particular came under a lot of criticism for covering up Joe Biden's mental decline. I don't think we've still heard the full story about that. So I make no bones about it that this man appears to be on the edge. But he's president of the world's greatest superpower. Now, there is such thing as the 25th Amendment in America, which can be invoked by the vice president and the cabinet to remove a president if they feel that he's incapable of performing his functions. Now, I don't know how seriously anyone in the United States is thinking about the 25th Amendment to the Constitution, but it's got to be surely a subject of debate if he keeps doing this, hasn't it? Is this further evidence that Trump is losing it? 0345 6060 973. And if he does carry out his threat to make tomorrow power plant day and bridge day, I mean, what prospects are there for an end to this war? He clearly has no idea how to end it. It's clearly not going as well as he thought it would. Yes, they may have destroyed the Iranian Navy. Yes, they may have destroyed a lot of Iranian infrastructure. But the Iranians keep hitting back, don't they? 0345 6060 973. Well, let's talk to Lord Hutton, John Hutton, former Defence Secretary, now Labour peer and former Chair of the Royal United Services Institute. John, very good morning. What's your reaction to this social media message?
Oh, good morning, Ian. Well, it's extremely disturbing. We've all grown up, you and I, Ian, in a generation at a time when we have respected the presidents of the United States. We might not agree with all the politics of them, but we recognize and appreciate them as the number one ally that has kept Europe free from first initially Soviet domination and now the threat of aggression from President Putin. But it is becoming very, very difficult indeed to show the sort of courtesy and respect that we would want to show the president of the United States when he behaves and acts in the way that he's doing. I am disturbed about his use of expletives. Again, that's not the behavior we expect from a senior political figure. But I'm probably more disturbed by his threat to target civilian infrastructure in the indiscriminate way that he has indicated. The United States were primary movers behind the Geneva Conventions and establishing proper rules of war. And they did that for very good and obvious self-interest reasons, that this is the best way to protect your own soldiers, sailors and airmen when they're in conflict. You impose a set of rules and obligations, and they're reciprocated. It protects your own economy from these kinds of threats as well. And there's no mercy, no quarter language from the US Defense Secretary as well. I mean, these are really troubling developments. My own personal hope, I hope people in the Congress begin to act to try and rein in some of these abuses, because they're undermining, I think, the Western alliance. They're undermining our cohesion, and they're causing a lot of chaos, I think, when it comes to this particular mission in the Middle East, which I think anyone in their right minds would not want to see the Americans lose. We cannot have a situation where Iran emerges stronger from this conflict. But I would, for one, like to see more evidence of a coherent strategy and plan about how the US is actually going to prevail in this conflict. And I'm still waiting to see that.
Well, the plan seems to be to destroy everything. And I suppose he would say, well, in a war, you do destroy everything. The Allies in the Second World War did destroy German power plants, German bridges, the country's infrastructure. So why should this be any different? That's what he would argue.
Well, he may well argue that. But I think the rules of war are pretty clear. You don't target directly civilian infrastructure. And I think you could make an argument about whether that did or didn't happen in World War II. My own view is that I think the bombing campaign was a legitimate response. But I think in the context of what the President of the United States has been saying about Iran, I don't see that connection between striking the power plants and the other civilian infrastructure that he says they're going to do. I think that would be extremely foolish for him to do.
Is there a way out of this for Trump, or does he literally have to see it to whatever the end is?
Well, I think there should be a way out for him, a coherent way out. He needs to claim a victory. I want him to claim a victory. I do not want to see the Ayatollahs reinforced in their stranglehold on Iran and the cruel oppression they're inflicting on their own people, let alone others in the region. But, and I think it's also true, Ian, that, you know, people say, well, you shouldn't start a war until you've got a clear plan about how you exit. There is no such war that has ever been started with a clear exit plan. I mean, let's be absolutely clear. The enemy gets a vote. The enemy can decide to do certain things that will change your plan. But I think to have started this campaign without any obvious way of dealing with the threat of blockade in the Strait of Hormuz strikes me as being very odd, because that was an obvious Iranian response. They've never made any secret that that's what they would do. I'm looking for signs that this is a joined up, coherent strategy, but it is hard to see that at the moment. So I don't know what the end game is here. I think when we're told by the United States government that there has already been regime change in Iran, well, I mean, that's palpably not true. Yes, they have killed certain people, but the regime itself is still in place and it seems to be even more strongly embedded. So I'm still looking to see evidence here and that there is a plan, and I hope we see it soon. I haven't seen it so far.
We're 21 days away from the King's State visit to the United States. I'm sure Sir Ed Davey will be on the airwaves today saying this is further evidence that visit should be cancelled. What's your view?
No, I think the King should definitely visit the United States. I think it would be a mistake to cancel His Majesty's visit. I don't think there'd be any purpose to be served in that. I mean, I hope the visit goes well and there isn't any embarrassment to the King, but I think it would be a very silly political gesture for us to cancel the King's visit. That would serve no purpose at all.
John, thank you. That's Lord John Hutton there, Labour peer, former Defence Secretary. Hallo Blake joins me now, British-Iranian activist and co-founder of United for Marsa. Hallo, thank you for joining us. What's your reaction to this kind of language from Donald Trump?
I wonder if it's all a political gain. But in terms of the civilian infrastructure, we believe they all belong to the Iranian people. But we do differentiate the civilian infrastructure with the IRGC's infrastructure, the command centres, the bases, and some of the factories that I actually own. So, you know, up to this point, the precise strikes are working. Those repressive apparatus are being weakened. You know, IRGC's being weakened, which is something that Iranian people have been strongly supportive of. Those inside Iran tell us it's either die or freedom. So they're very much hanging tight. They're not leaving the country, and they're waiting for those bases to be eliminated. So it qualifies the playing game so they can come out again and they can take over the institutions and take their country back. So our position is that those infrastructures belong to the Iranian people and must remain there for the future of Iran. So the water systems must be spared. The power plants must be spared. But please continue to target the IRGC's apparatus.
I was watching an Iranian lady being interviewed in front of her house, which had been destroyed. And she was being very moderate in her reaction. I think it would be me, my house had been destroyed, I would be in tears and sort of thinking, well, what on earth is the future? But she seemed to be very philosophical about it. Now, she couldn't actually say that she welcomed these bombing strikes. But the danger here, isn't it, that if they do target the civilian infrastructure, they will turn some of the population who might otherwise have been in their favour against them. And that would make regime change very, very unlikely if too many people took that stance.
I agree with that position. The regime will use that stance as a propaganda tool across the people that they do not agree with the regime. So I think that could be used in a propaganda campaign. So and we don't want that, because up to this point, people have been really, majority have been united and waiting for that moment to come out with a call of Reza Pahlavi to come out and take over the streets again. So, yeah, I agree with that statement.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us. That's Hala Blake there. Now, Susie from Margate says, we have to separate the man between the leader of the country. As a man, he's awful. He's the most awful person that I've ever known, and he's just so low. But as the President of the United States, what he is doing for the Iranian people and for the world with the nuclear uranium, I believe in him in that. I mean, that's a slightly tortuous position, isn't it? Because how can you separate the man from the office when he uses the office to make these awful comments, which to a lot of psychologists indicate a degree of mental instability? Is that being unfair? I mean, do you compare him now to... I mean, Joe Biden was not issuing tweets like this, but he was clearly suffering mental decline, certainly in his last year in office. The media covered it up, disgracefully, in my view. And therefore, I think that can't happen twice. And there will be people who say, oh, yeah, you're just picking on him because he's a Republican and he's on the right. No. I don't pick on anybody, but I do have to say, if somebody comes out with this sort of thing, and it's not the first time he's done this, if we don't highlight it, if we don't call it out, then we're not fulfilling our jobs either, are we? Do you think Donald Trump is in danger of losing it? 0345 6060 973. News headlines at 17 minutes past 7 with Dominic Ellis.
Iran has warned of a devastating and widespread response if President Trump carries out his threat to destroy bridges and power plants. NHS England says people should not be put off seeking the care they need during a six-day strike by resident doctors starting tomorrow. And people receiving universal credit or a state pension will see an increase to their payments from this morning. LBC weather. A settled day for large parts of the UK, staying dry with sunny spells, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Traffic was being held on the A13 westbound at the Lodge Avenue flyover at Barking. In the last few moments, it's just reopened and those delays are beginning to ease. But in Barking, Ripple Road remains closed eastbound because of an ongoing investigation. On the trains, Avanti West Coast and London Northwestern services aren't running again today between Milton Keynes and Euston. It's because of the work on the West Coast main line, which also means that the Lioness line can't run between Euston and Willesden Junction, and no Bakerloo line as well between Stonebridge Park and Harrow and Wealdstone. Also on the Underground, there's no Hammersmith and City line running at all today, and there are severe delays on the Jubilee line.
This is LBC.
It's the cinematic event of the year. Critics are saying a stunning, breathtaking triumph of savings. It's 2-for-1 cinema tickets from Compasa Market in cinemas all year.
That sounds like a great movie.
Sergey, it's no movie. It's 2-for-1 offer on cinema tickets.
Oh, yeah. I knew that.
Get 2-for-1 cinema tickets every Tuesday or Wednesday with the Compasa Market app. The simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product to Compasa Market, one membership per year, participating cinemas, 2 standard tickets only, cheap as free. T's and C's.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Morrisons to Lidl and saving £41 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/you save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands, and your fresh 5 a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value. Prices check 26th of the 3rd, 26. Morrisons also sell other products. See online for more details.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're river cruising along the Rhine past storybook castles or uncovering centuries of history on a tour of Japan. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply. Over 50s only.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest, fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
From the big transformations to the small home improvements, you can feel as proud as a peacock with Wix.
This is LBC with Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060973.
20 past 7 on LBC. Let's run through some of the front pages. On the front of the LBC website, Iran warns of devastating retaliation after Trump's expletive-filled threats. We'll come to your calls on that. In the Independent, Iran warns of devastating retaliation after Trump's swear-laden threat to unleash hell. The Daily Star takes a rather different line. Bookies preparing for a big bashing. £1 billion betting bonanza. Punters to wager 10-figure sum on Grand National, Masters and crucial Prem games. The I newspaper. Trump misses Iran ultimatum after Airman's great escape. The Sun got gun. Not their best headline ever, I would venture to suggest. Reference to Top Gun there. The Times, new Trump deadline to open straight or face hell, and pregnancy deaths in the NHS at highest level for 2 decades. We'll skip over the sport headlines, given the West Ham result yesterday. You'll understand why. Financial Times, Trump renews Iran threat in bid to reopen Hormuz Strait. Daily Express, vile betrayal of grooming gang victims. The Mirror, unhinged. Guess who that's about? The Daily Mail, Trump drops F-bomb on Iran. The Telegraph, we got him. US airman rescued in daring raid. That's sort of like a day behind the times, I would have said, if you see what I mean. And The Guardian, Trump threatens to unleash hell on Iran in expletive-laden tirade. So the front page is more or less united on what the big story of the day is. Hardly surprising, I would venture to suggest. Now, before we talk more about Donald Trump's expletive-laden social media post, let's talk about the royals, because they put on a united front at the Easter service at Windsor Castle in the first public family outing since Andrew's arrest. He obviously wasn't there, neither were any members of his family. But one person who was Rebecca English, royal editor of the Daily Mail. Let's talk to Rebecca now. Good morning.
Lovely to talk to you.
Now, what was the atmosphere like there? I mean, I've seen some pictures. They all looked relatively cheerful, given the circs.
Exactly. They were very cheerful. There were pretty big crowds there as well to see them. And I think what was indicative of that yesterday was the focus was on who was there rather than who was not there.
Yes. And I suppose no one expected any of the Andrew side of the family to turn up. But is that going to be the same for everything now, that effectively they're all excommunicated, no matter if they're perfectly innocent of any wrongdoing?
Well, apparently no. not. So, I mean, obviously, Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor is a persona non grata now and for the foreseeable future. And to be honest, I can't see that changing. I can't see him coming to a family event. But when I discussed this with the palace before Easter, I was told that while his daughters, Princess Beatrice and Princess Eugenie, weren't going to be there this time on agreement of the king, it was very much stressed to me that they would be making appearances at future family occasions. And Royal Ascot is one of those that's mooted that they might be at.
So who was there yesterday? I mean, how far does the attendance cascade down?
Big turnout yesterday. There were some new faces, actually. So we had the King and the Queen, obviously, leading the charge. We had the Prince and Princess of Wales and their three children, who were obviously always a massively popular draw for the crowds. We had Princess Anne, her husband. Interestingly, we had Peter Phillips, her son, his fiancée, Harriet Spurling. They're getting married in June. And as well as his two daughters, she brought her daughter for the first time, a little girl called Georgina, who's 13, who was very much being flanked by her stepsisters-to-be, but she seemed to cope with it really admirably, and it's a sign of how blended the family is now. And then we had Duke of Edinburgh, his son, and the Chateaus, who are great favourites of the King. So it was actually one of the biggest family turnouts we've seen for years, despite the fact that the Yorks weren't there.
And, of course, 3 weeks today, the King and Queen will be in the United States on their state visit. I mean, what could possibly go wrong? Do you think that, do you think there's any part of them that's actually looking forward to it?
Well, I'd say a bit like you, I probably had a bit of a gulp when I saw the front pages of the paper today, because it's not going to make it an easy visit for them. It was never going to be. But obviously the government see this is a very good way of trying to employ the royal family's soft power.
It's the government that really were behind this, weren't they? It's not the King and Queen themselves that particularly wanted to go.
No, they don't choose where they go at all, Ian. It is the government's request, and I think they see this as a way to try and kind of, fill that gap on the special relationship that exists at the moment, particularly between President Trump and our Prime Minister and our government. But, of course, it's not going to be easy for him, and the King will get quite a lot of flack for doing it personally, when actually he has no choice in it. This is what he's got to do. This is his job, effectively.
And, of course, if Donald Trump does issue one of these tweets during the state visit or make some sort of remark at the state dinner, King Charles is going to come under enormous pressure to react. Now, he's very seasoned. He's very good at choosing his language. He can make a statement without making a statement, if you see what I mean. He'll be getting a lot of advice from his courtiers about how to react to any potential Donald Trump incident, won't he?
Yeah, I think the palace's hope is that President Trump won't say anything. He has enormous respect for the royal family. He's made no secret of it. Not just for Queen Elizabeth, but for the King, who, you know, it's worth emphasising it. In those kind of wilderness years for Trump, the King carried on writing to him, continuing that relationship. And I think that's something that President Trump holds quite dear. So I think the hope is he won't say anything. But of course, you never know with President Trump, as we've seen from today's papers. Anything could happen. But you're right, Ian. He's got decades of diplomacy under his belt, and I think he would kind of smile and get on with it. But I think the hope is, fingers crossed, nothing will happen.
I'll tell you what would provoke a reaction from the King if Donald Trump insulted the Navy again, because, of course, the King served in the Navy, didn't he?
And that does make it really difficult for me, because he is head of our armed forces. And this is where I think those quiet conversations away from the cameras will come in useful. You never know. Donald Trump says one thing, and then, you know, when he leaves, something else happens. But I think that's where they hope this diplomacy will happen, not just in front of the cameras, but those quiet conversations when they have time together, those bilateral meetings at the White House, that's what's going to count.
So, do you get a trip on the royal flight? Are you presumably going to be covering the visit?
Yeah, I will be covering the visit, Ian, but unfortunately not. They're travelling quite small this time, so I'm making my own way there. But I tell you what, this is one I wouldn't miss, because you cannot take your eye off the ball on this one. That said, it's worth noting, although there was a lot of talk when President Trump came for his two historic state visits to the UK, staff at the palace tell me he was charm personified. They really didn't know what to expect. Nothing was too much trouble. He was very accommodating. So let's just hope that's reciprocated in Washington.
See, I'm just thinking, I'm actually going to be in New York that weekend, the weekend prior to him going. I'm thinking, I might try and persuade my bosses here to let me stay and cover the royal visit. That would be great,
well,
wouldn't it?
Well, he is coming to New York for a day as well. So if you hung on in New York midweek, you might even get to see him there. I mean, it'd be interesting to see what the crowds are like. You know, with the whole Epstein scandal, that's another layer of, you know, will people be turning out to try and shout things at the king? No one really knows. It's unusually for somewhere like America where you'd expect a really positive reaction. I don't think anyone knows quite what to expect on this one.
Rebecca, thank you very much. That's Rebecca English, Royal Editor of the Daily Mail. Now, I'm sure you've all got views on what Donald Trump has been saying. I know Lee in Watford has. Hello, Lee.
Yeah, hey, and how are you doing?
Hi, good, thank you. What would you like to say?
Yeah, I think Trump's deadline will slip again. I can't really see that sticking tomorrow. I think he's just becoming more and more irrelevant. I think there's over 190 ships and tankers have now transited the Strait of Hormuz. So I think the rest of the world is negotiating with Iran, not Trump.
Well, I think they're only letting through about 10 or 15 a day, and it depends which country they're from, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it all changed on Friday, Ian. A French tanker went through.
Yep.
Three Oman tankers went through, a Malaysia one, Indonesia, Japan, China, Panama. I think that 41-nation group that spoke to Cooper, you know, during that whole session, I think they're the ones that are negotiating on the news. And then Trump's kind of left high and dry because he can't get the uranium without 50,000 US troops. You know, is he really just going to go and bomb civilian infrastructure for the fun of it? Who knows, right? But I think US and Israel are just getting marginalised by the rest of the world as the economic crisis speeds up.
See, the thing that I think a lot of people have missed on the Strait of Hormuz, it's that it's Asian countries that are, I'd say primarily, but are certainly hugely affected by this. And you've got already a lot of fuel rationing, a lot of emergency measures being taken in many Asian countries where I think there was one, was it the Philippines or Malaysia? One of them, I think 98% of their oil comes through the Strait of Hormuz. So it's we tend to think that it's all about European nations. It's not. This is a world crisis.
Yeah, absolutely. But the European nations are about 40% of the passage because of fertilizer, ammonia. You know, oil and gas is very Asia dependent. You're right. South Korea, I think, is the one that's 90-odd%. Malaysia is the other one. But if you're at the point like Bangladesh, where they're shutting businesses 2 days a week, who are you going to talk to? You're not going to talk to the US government or the Israeli government. You're going to talk to Iran.
Lee, grateful for your insight. Thank you very much indeed. That's Lee in Watford there. Right, we'll come to more of your calls over the course of the next half an hour. We'll look at the bank holiday travel and the business report in just a few moments' time here on LBC. It's 7:31, time for the news headlines with Dominic Ellis.
Iran has warned of a devastating response if President Trump targets its critical civilian infrastructure. He's threatened to attack Iranian power plants and bridges if Tehran doesn't reopen the Strait of Hormuz by tomorrow night. NHS England says people should not be put off seeking the care they need during a 6-day strike by resident doctors. The walkout over jobs and pay is due to begin tomorrow morning. And a host of benefits and the state pension are rising from this morning as the new financial year begins. Most benefits will go up by 3.8% and pensions will increase by 4.8%. LBC weather, a settled day for large parts of the UK, staying dry with sunny spells, a high of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
Tony, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Scott has called from Glasgow. Hi, Scott.
Jane's in Camden first. Hi, Jane.
Households will benefit from £150 off of their energy bills with a price cap, giving households certainty on their bills until July.
Hear every side of the story.
You feel like asking what you want to look to now. The heat health farmer is going to have to get involved.
I'm at the petrol station and it's just cost me nearly £100 to fill up half.
I'm almost in my 40s and I haven't ever had a break in war. Or in any of these living costs.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC, leading Britain's conversation.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. and she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
McGriddles, a new McDonald's breakfast. So it's maple syrup infused. It's sweet, then it's savoury. Because the sausage, you know, and the cheese and the egg. Oh, it's got the golden arches stamped on it too. Make that make sense. It's hard to put into words, but... Until 11am, subject to availability. Fees apply to delivery orders while stocks last.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're river cruising along the Rhine, past storybook castles, or uncovering centuries of history on a tour of Japan. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply over 50s only.
From the big transformations to the small home improvements, you can feel as proud as a peacock with Wix.
Apply. Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
7:35 on LBC. We're asking, is Donald Trump's social media post, expletive-laden social media post in tabloid ease, is this further proof that he's losing it? That he's flailing around because he doesn't know what to do in the war against Iran, which is not going how he thought it would. He thought it would be a cakewalk, a bit like Venezuela. It hasn't turned out like that. These things rarely do. Let's run through a few texts before we come to a business report. Kevin in Harlow says, Trump's sanity is definitely worrying. And the most worrying thing is that Trump has the ability to blow the whole world up with just a couple of buttons. I can't help but picture the film Dr. Strangelove. Well, that's a bit of an apocalyptic thing for Bank Holiday Monday, isn't it? Albert says, morning Ian, I believe Trump is just as or even more dangerous than Putin. The man is unhinged and is totally out of control. Well, this is where you have to trust the checks and balances that are within the American Constitution, because they should be able to keep any kind of president in check. But of course, the problem there is that if people were planning to invoke the 25th Amendment, as far as I understand it, and the 25th Amendment essentially is the one where you can unseat a president, it has to start off with the vice president and the cabinet, and the cabinet have to vote by majority to do that. And then it goes to, I think, the House of Representatives. I mean, that's unlikely, isn't it, given that the Republicans control the House of Representatives and the Senate at the moment. That may not be the case after November, of course. Right, let's turn to the world of business. Anna McDonald joins us, investment manager at Aubrey Capital Management. Anna, good morning. I suppose we might think there is no business news on a bank holiday, but of course there is, particularly on oil prices.
Yes. Well, I mean, you've already been talking about what Trump was doing over the weekend and saying, and then on Fox News, he was going to said he'd further blow everything up and take the oil if a deal isn't reached soon. But and so that you'd expect to send oil prices up. However, the American news website Axios is reporting a possible 45-day ceasefire. So oil is actually reasonably steady, and the markets that are open today in Asia are also haven't moved a huge amount. I mean, if we look forward, you can see oil contract prices, and that's contracts for future oil deliveries. And they're back at the mid-$70 for November and fall back next year. So if the markets are pricing in a pretty sharp recovery once this does come to an end. Now, we don't know how long it's going to go, but we are how long this is going to persist. But we do know that when it does end, we do expect oil prices to drop back quite sharply.
Now, soaring fuel prices, apparently, according to the Times, are driving the switch to electric vehicles. Has that been accelerated over the last four weeks?
Yes, it has. But it's also driven by another aspect, which is that the cost of overnight home charging has fallen to as low as 3.5 pence per kilowatt hour. Now, that's because of something actually quite ironic. It's that ministers have scrapped green levies or basically moved them into general taxation. So it's now much cheaper to charge a car overnight. And so that makes them look more attractive for those drivers who are in the position where they can have their own home charging point, because it does make it considerably cheaper than driving a petrol car.
And workers' rights legislation comes into effect today. We're going to be talking about that after eight. But given the extra burdens, regulatory burdens that are being put on business, that is going to drive up job losses, isn't it?
Well, it could well do. That's certainly what business people are saying. They're saying that companies have had so much to deal with. You've had national insurance hikes last week, minimum wage rises, national insurance was last year and this year, and minimum wage rises were last week. And then, as we've been discussing, you've got what's going on in the Middle East driving energy costs. So they think that rather than protecting jobs, this could actually mean that employers will make job cuts, and they may not hire new workers. And we do see that showing up in data, and we see youth unemployment at an 11-year high. So it is definitely going to add pressure to companies, and there are actually future changes in track which might even add to those pressures, including guaranteed minimum hours for those on zero or low-hour contracts. So yes, business people are complaining about these changes.
Now, Labour are apparently going to break an election pledge to ban foie gras to ease an EU trade deal. Now, that's several papers are covering this, so it must be true. I mean, is there anything they won't do to appease the EU?
The thing is that the EU says that member states cannot ban each other's goods on animal welfare grounds. And since Brexit, therefore, Britain has had the freedom to do what they like. They could ban, they have banned foie gras. That happened a while ago. They could ban fur or farming for fur, and they have done that. So, but the thing is, if they want to make a new trade agreement, they would need a specific exemption to be able to continue to ban foie gras and fur. And the EU isn't offering that. So they are saving they're keeping their powder dry for things that are going to have more economic value to the UK, such as access to precision bred crops, which they argue will deliver much greater benefit.
Thank you very much indeed, Anna. That's Anna McDonald, Investment Manager at Aubrey Capital Management. Let's run through a few more texts for you. Martin says they won't do that, i.e. invoke the 25th Amendment, as Trump's cabinet is filled with his yes-men. They're scared of him. It's a very dangerous place that we are living in. Steve says, do you happen to know if Trump or any of his administration has acknowledged the fact that bombing infrastructure and sending them back to the Stone Age will hurt the Iranian people, the very people they say that they were coming to help? And Andy says, morning Ian, listen up, Trump's a genius. With the Strait of Hormuz still closed, the world scrambles for oil while America dominates. He's locking in Greenland resources and is now in control of Venezuela and ramping up Canada and Mexico. I haven't heard that one. Cuba, maybe. This is the real new world order, US energy supremacy. Trump will go down as the greatest president. Well, there's always one, Andy, isn't there? Right, let's look at the bank holiday travel. How chaotic might it become during the course of the day as everyone rushes back home to go back to work tomorrow? Or are they? Simon Calder joins us, travel correspondent for The Independent. Simon, how's it looking?
Good morning. Ian, if you are commuting in from Milton Keynes Central, I know you're not, you're travelling from the other direction, but Milton Keynes Central to London Euston is not only closed today for a fourth day in a row. It's actually going to stay closed on Tuesday and Wednesday. And just to put you in the picture, particularly if you're a motorist and you think, well, I don't know what that's about, this is probably the busiest intercity line in Europe. And it runs from London Euston to Milton Keynes and then carries on to the West Midlands, Northwest England, Southern Scotland, North Wales. All weekend, Network Rail has closed that crucial 50-mile stretch, and it's going to remain so all day Tuesday and Wednesday as they get through some important work. I calculate that it's actually slightly trickier to get from Milton Keynes to London Euston than it is this weekend to reach the far side of the moon. That's because the astronauts on Artemis don't need to use a rail replacement bus at any stage of their journey. So yes, the journey which might have taken half an hour before is now taking roughly 2 hours. Bus to Bedford and then a train through to London St Pancras International. That's not the only one. Further north on that same West Coast main line, you've got various bits of work in Cumbria and then from Carlisle north to both Glasgow and Edinburgh. Rail replacement buses abound in that part of the world, so everybody is either, if they're coming from Scotland, switching to the East Coast main line, which is busy, or from Manchester, and I witnessed some of this on Saturday, they are getting trains across to Sheffield and then to London St Pancras, and those London St Pancras trains are absolutely heaving. So yeah, one more day of pain for most people, because we've got plenty of other works, Herne Bay to Ramsgate, Winchester to Southampton, a couple of lines through Yorkshire. Should get better, but not on that West Coast main line.
How has Storm Dave affected things? Because I always thought when they named it Storm Dave, I thought this is going to be a real macho one, but it turned out to be a bit Rupert-y rather than Davish, didn't it?
Well, I don't know. You can talk to anybody who over the weekend, the latter half of Saturday into Sunday morning, was trying to travel between across the Irish Sea, between the Republic and Great Britain. We saw at least a dozen ferry crossings cancelled, mostly from Wales and Scotland to the island of Ireland. Dozens of flights cancelled between the UK, between various parts of Great Britain and Dublin, including quite a number which took off, flew to Dublin, flew round in circles, had a go or two at landing and then flew back, including one poor plane full of Ryanair passengers who took off from Gatwick, spent 2.5 hours not getting to Dublin before they landed at Stansted Airport in Essex, and they sat on the ground there for a few more hours. So that was very disruptive. Probably there's still people struggling back this morning as a result of that, that woke up in the wrong country. But that should be relatively clear. And the picture I'm getting at all the big airports, I've checked Heathrow, Gatwick, Stansted, Luton, Manchester, those are all looking relatively smooth at the moment. Of course, things can get trickier later, but weather looking fairly benign.
And just finally, roads looking free this bank holiday Monday?
No. If you are listening now and you are in your car and you're nearing the end of a long journey, then please feel duly smug. If you've got a journey of, let's say, 80-100 miles to do, set off now, because from 10 o'clock onwards things are going to get really tough. Lunchtime, it will get really tricky. The areas I've got marked on my bingo card for congestion, I'm sorry to say, are northbound on the M5.
I knew you were going to say that one, because that's the one I would have predicted.
Well, that's because it always comes up. Only going on basis of what I've seen every Easter since the dawn of time. So yeah, M5 northbound through Somerset to Bristol and then a bit towards Birmingham. A303, very popular with a lot of people from London who've been in Devon and Cornwall for the weekend, coming back particularly around the Stonehenge area. Of course, the M25, mostly the western section, and that's all the way around from the M23 turn off for Gatwick, through Heathrow and the M4, M40, all the way around to the M1 turning, and then In northwest England, it's mostly the M6 that's going to be sticky, particularly coming out of the Lake District and indeed out of Blackpool, that section okay. where you join the M6 and then head south.
Simon, thank you very much indeed. That's Simon Calder there, travel correspondent for The Independent. Ian in Manchester says, good morning, Ian. Do you ever go home? Every time I turn on the radio, there you are. Keep up the good work. Well, I've only been on once a day. I mean, that's not unusual, is it? But I won't be on tonight for my normal show. James Hansen is covering that, and I'll be back on the evening show tomorrow. We're going to talk about the resident doctor's strike, which is starting tomorrow in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to LBC. I'm Ian Dale. It's 7:48. News headlines with Dominic Ellis.
Iran has warned of a devastating and widespread response if the United States targets its power plants and bridges. A host of benefits in the state pension arising from this morning as the new financial year begins. And the drinks company Diageo has joined Pepsi in withdrawing its sponsorship of Wireless Festival after Kanye West was announced as the headliner. LBC weather, a settled day for large parts of the UK, staying dry with sunny spells, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are problems on the South Circular Road at Putney. At the High Street, the traffic lights aren't working, so do expect delays. In Selsdon, Old Farley Road is partially blocked both ways because of an ongoing investigation, and that's causing queues. And in Barking, Ripple Road remains closed eastbound because of an ongoing investigation. On the trains, Avanti West Coast and London Northwestern services aren't running between Milton Keynes and Euston again today because of the engineering works to the West Coast Main Line, which also means the Lioness Line can't run between Euston and Wilston Junction, and no Bakerloo Line trains running between Stonebridge Park and Harrow and Wilston, and no Hammersmith and City Line throughout today.
This is LBC.
Right, brace yourself. Co-op members can get two pizzas and a tub of Ben and Jerry's for a fiver. Yep, a fiver. It's kind of a big deal, eh? Co-op, owned by you, right by you.
Ends 14th of April. Selected products and stores subject to availability. Co-op Group Food Stores only. See co-op.co.uk for details.
This is LBC.
The all-new, all-electric Toyota CHR Plus. Sleek, stylish and quietly reliable. Available with 0% APR representative with £1,500 deposit contribution and save £1,500 with the electric car grant. Get that Toyota electric feeling. Visit your nearest Toyota centre. Price from £34,495, available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 30th of June 2026. Optional final payment, indemnities may be required. See website, T's and C's apply.
Cancer doesn't care about childhood. It doesn't care what they miss out on or how much you want to protect them. But we do. At Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, we fund life-saving research, vital family support, and the special things that help seriously ill kids be kids until no childhood is lost to cancer. Join us. Search GOSH Charity.
Next.
Hi, just these, thanks. Do you do cashback?
Just need to check you're not a robot first. New security policy.
Okay.
How many traffic lights can you see out the window?
Oh, two.
No, that's wrong.
Right, well, obviously I'm not a robot.
That's what a robot would say.
What a load of malarkey. Smarty keeps things simple, like 80 gigabytes for £10. And on a rolling monthly SIM plan, you're free to leave any time. Less malarkey, more Smarty. Search Smarty Mobile.
Interactive Investor would like to say welcome and thank you. Welcome to all our new investors who joined us over the past few months. And thank you to a certain competitor that decided to change their fee structure and sent them all our way. Visit Interactive Investor to see what you could save with our low flat fee. Interactive Investor. I think, therefore I. Remember, when investing, your capital is at risk.
Ian Dale. Text 84850. This is LBC.
7:51 on LBC. Well, tomorrow the resident doctors start their 16th strike. Yes, 16th strike. But the NHS is urging patients not to put off seeking the care they need. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of disruption tomorrow. You can't have a strike like this without there being disruption. But obviously, consultants are taking over some of the work. But this strike's going to last for 6 days. Well, let's talk to Dr. Chris Strether, who is NHS London's Chief Medical Director. Chris, very good morning. This message that people should still attend their appointments and act normally, I mean, what kind of disruption are you expecting?
So the first thing is hospitals will provide a normal service generally for patients, and hospitals will be safe. The sad thing about this is this has been going on for quite a long time. As you said, it's the 16th time. So we've got a pretty practiced playbook making sure that services continue. So 95% of planned care, so investigations and operations, have been taking place, took place during the December strikes. So we're pretty good at doing things. So keeping things safe and keeping routine work going. But that's at a cost. So other staff, so consultant staff, doctors who are not striking, nurses, physios, managers, all work extra hard, and we erode their goodwill by calling on their goodwill yet again for the 16th time. But I'm confident they'll do that because they believe in public service, and we will deliver safe care over the next 6 days. But it's a really disruptive time to have the strike. We had less notice because the rules have changed about how much notice they have to give. It's timed around the Easter holiday, frankly, to cause the most disruption possible. It's the time when other staff have well-earned holidays, and so other people are cancelling the holidays. It's trivial, but I'm on leave today, and I'm doing things like this because it's really important. So it will be safe, and people can, unless appointments are cancelled, people should attend. Unless they're contacted directly to cancel things, people should go ahead and access hospitals, either in emergencies or for routine appointments. But we can really do without this.
And this is probably going to happen again and again, and obviously until some sort of agreement is reached. Do you believe, and maybe you don't want to get into this particular controversy, but do you think these strikes are now being, they're politically motivated by a left-wing clique within the BMA?
So I have no business really commenting on the politics of it, but I think they are wrong-headed. The pay increases they've already obtained, just below 30%, and with this deal they'd average 35% over 4 years, are very generous. They've received more of an increase in pay than other public sector workers, and particularly other clinical staff, nurses and physios, etc. So they're considering the state of the public finances and the extra strain put on it by the situation in the Middle East, they're generous. There are issues about job security, about certainty about a career pathway, and about conditions of work, which we're trying to address. But to be honest, the managerial time and the goodwill we had to put into dealing with strikes takes away attention from doing those things about reforming the training, which are really important, and we and I are very committed to.
Thank you very much indeed. That's Dr. Chris Strother there, NHS London's Chief Medical Director. Dr. Ollie Scargill joins us now, resident doctor who's claimed in today's Telegraph that the BMA are driving junior doctors towards Wes Streeting. I said something similar on the programme yesterday and got a lot of flack for it. I said, look, not all resident doctors are in favour of this industrial action, and they see the BMA becoming an increasingly left-wing front organisation. Ollie Scargill, thank you very much for talking to us this morning. I know you're about to go on duty. What evidence do you have for these claims?
Thanks for having me on the show, Ian. I know from speaking to my colleagues, to senior doctors in the NHS and to other NHS professionals who haven't had as generous deals as we've had, that the support for the BMA in these strikes is just starting to wane. It's getting embarrassing. None of us went into this profession to damage the NHS, but we've increasingly got patients asking us if we're going to strike, other NHS professionals like nurses, physician associates, talking about us striking. And when you hear what Chris said about how generous our deal is, 35% over the last 3 years, I don't understand why the BMA is so fixed on pay as part of the deal, because the most important thing to me and to most other resident doctors is the jobs crisis. It is so difficult for us to get a job. That is what the government should be focusing on. And I'm sure that if Liz Streeton were to propose a deal that had a credible offer on jobs, the BMA members would vote to accept that, probably regardless of what the deal was on pay.
Well, there is a simple solution to this. Not go on strike. I mean, do you think there is going to be a lot of strike breaking tomorrow?
There was strike breaking in the last round, and I think there will be even more this round.
And, I mean, it's always difficult, isn't it, when you go against the grain and when you have some colleagues who are going to go on strike and some who are not. It can lead to a lot of divisiveness in the workplace.
It's not fun to put your head above the parapet, but I'm afraid I've just got to the end of my tether with this. It's just incredibly embarrassing. Before these last few years, doctors didn't go on strike. And I think 5 or 6 day strikes are quite unprecedented for doctors. And now we've got a reputation for striking. That's not what I want in my profession.
What do you make of the fact that the BMA itself is only offering its own staff 2.75% pay rise? I mean, the hypocrisy has to be seen to be believed, doesn't it?
It does seem hypocritical. I'm not really across the detail of what's going on inside the BMA. I resigned my membership in December just because I couldn't justify paying towards a union, which I think was actually damaging my career prospects.
Well, it's very brave of you to speak out. I hope you don't get any flack for it, but thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme this morning. Right, well, let's move on from that. I'm sure you're going to hear a lot about this resident doctor strike over the next few days on LBC. It will be very interesting to see how many resident doctors do decide not to go on strike and turn up for work. Now, Keir Starmer has said that workers, pensioners and children are all better off, that everyone should ignore the critics. We really are standing up for working people, he says. Do you buy this? And is the government on the side of workers or welfare? There are fears for this music festival as a top sponsor Pepsi pulls out after the storm over the Hitler fan Kanye West. Is it time for Sir Keir Starmer to step in and block the controversial rapper from performing at Wireless? And there's a call for blue badge misuse crackdown as 1 in 20 holds the Lifeline parking permit. We'll get more on that over the course of the next 60 minutes here on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, Iran has warned its retaliation will be devastating and widespread if the United States hits its power plants and bridges. In an expletive post, President Trump threatened again to unleash hell if the Strait of Hormuz isn't opened by tomorrow. Tehran has described that ultimatum as nonsense. Former Labour Defence Secretary Lord Hutton has told Ian Dale on LBC this morning such a move by the US would be foolish.
Of war are pretty clear. You don't target directly civilian infrastructure. And I think you could make an argument about whether that did or didn't happen in World War II. My own view is that I think that the bombing campaign was a legitimate response. But I think in the context of what the President of the United States has been saying about Iran, I don't see that connection between striking the power plants and the other civilian infrastructure.
Health officials say people should seek care as normal during a 6 day strike by resident doctors in England. The walkout is due to begin tomorrow morning. The doctors' union, the BMA, called the strike in a dispute with the government over jobs and pay. Dr. Chris Strether is NHS London's chief medical director. He's told LBC hospitals will continue to provide a normal service for patients.
That's at a cost. So other staff, so consultant staff, doctors who are not striking, nurses, physios, managers all work extra hard, and we erode their goodwill by calling on their goodwill yet again for the 16th time. But I'm confident they'll do that because they believe in public service, and we will deliver safe care over the next 6 days.
A series of changes to tax and benefits have come into force this morning. It means millions more people receiving universal credit or a state pension will see their payments increase. Most benefits will go up by 3.8% and pensions will increase by 4.8%. The two-child benefit cap has also been scrapped. Pepsi and Diageo have withdrawn their sponsorship of Wireless Festival after Kanye West was announced as the headline act. The rapper, who's been condemned for anti-Semitism, is to perform at the event in London's Finsbury Park in July. West previously apologised and blamed a bipolar episode. And the four astronauts on NASA's Artemis II mission are preparing to fly around the far side of the moon tonight. The crew will venture deeper into space than any other human before, but they won't be able to speak with mission control for 40 minutes, as radio communications will be blocked by the moon itself. LBC weather, a settled day for large parts of the UK, staying dry with sunny spells, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dot Manichellis.
When it comes to Easter eggs, why chocolate? Why not something fluffier? A number one millionaire's panettone egg with chocolate drops and oozing caramel. And why is chocolate only for eggs? Number one berry blush hot cross buns are packed with creamy white chocolate and juicy berries. Profound. Chocolate eggs are only the beginning.
Indulge in a range of Easter treats at Waitrose, the home of food lovers.
Selected stores subject to availability. Prices may vary in Channel Islands, Little Waitrose and Partners and Concessions.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, very good morning. It's 4 minutes past eight. Welcome to Bank Holiday Breakfast with me, Ian Dale. Nick Fry will be back tomorrow from seven as usual. Now, the winner of Pedant of the Day Award on LBC goes to Kenneth, who says, Ian, when you next go to New York, in the interest of accuracy, could you kindly distinguish between the state and the city? Well, last time I looked, New York City was in the state of New York, so I think I'd be very, very accurate. Oh, dear, oh, dear. Right, I want to spend the majority of this hour talking about workers' rights, because the Employment Rights Act is coming into force today, or is it tomorrow? And this is quite a major piece of legislation. If you look back to the Thatcher years, none of the trade union reforms that the Thatcher government introduced have ever been reversed. Tony Blair didn't do it, Gordon Brown didn't do it, and Keir Starmer isn't really doing it, but he is increasing the number of regulations and responsibilities that businesses have to cope with, both small and medium and large businesses. Now, if you come into power as your main objective to stimulate economic growth, do you think putting extra regulations and burdens on business is a good idea? Well, I certainly don't. I mean, I'm sure that there probably does need to be one or two reforms to employment legislation. But when you've got to a situation where people are now going to be able to claim sickness leave from the first day of employment, when fathers can claim paternity rights from the first day of employment, I think business can be forgiven for thinking, well, do these people actually even know how businesses run? And you look at the makeup of the cabinet. And last time I looked, there isn't a single cabinet minister who has ever run a business. So is it any surprise that all of these measures keep being introduced to add further regulation and red tape to businesses, further cost to businesses, and that they wonder why unemployment is going up and will continue to go up for the foreseeable future? Now, there are all sorts of influences on unemployment. AI is going to be obviously a massive one. But nobody can really believe that, like the imposition of extra national insurance on employers last year, that has had a catastrophic effect. The minimum wage has gone up by 34% over the last 4 years. Now, that's partly under the Conservative government as well, so I'm not making a case for them, because I think they did a terrible job in this area as well, introducing new regulations. But when you have employment costs for low-paid people going up by 34%, well, don't be surprised if fewer low-paid people are employed. When you increase the young person's minimum wage, don't be surprised when employers think, well, actually, we can't afford to pay young people this much anymore. So we're not going to take on more young people. So we get to a point in our economy where nearly a million young people are not in employment, education or training. As Liz Truss memorably once said, that is a disgrace. And it really is. And there's no sign that the Chancellor, the Business Secretary, any of the key employment, key economic spokespeople in Labour actually have a Scooby-Doo about the effects that their policies are having on the world of business. Now, what they will do, I can guarantee, over the next 12 months, or possibly longer, is blame the war in Iran for all our economic ills. Now, they will have a degree of accuracy in doing that, because inevitably it's going to have an effect on our economy. But they shouldn't be allowed to get away with just blaming the war in Iran. They've got to look closer to home and look at their own policies, particularly with this Employment Rights Act. So I'm wondering whether you think that workers in this country do get a bad deal and they need to go further, or whether you understand that the further they go, the more costs and regulations they put on business, it's going to be counterproductive. 0345 6060 973. You have to create conditions for economic growth, and to do that, you don't put more regulations on. You have to give future business people, people who've got a business idea, they've got to think, well, it's worth my while investing money, taking a risk, employing people. And at the moment, a lot of people think, no, it's just not worth it. Lord Billimoria joins us. He's founder of Cobra Beer, chair of the International Chamber of Commerce UK, former head of the CBI as well, and independent crossbench peer. Karen, very good morning. Have I gone over the top there in my criticism of some of these new regulations, or do you think that some of them are actually going to be welcomed?
Good morning, Ian. This is, from a business point of view, extremely worrying situation, because if you go back to when the welfare state was created after the Second World War, it was created as a safety net. And it was there to help people if they needed the help. But the number one priority has always got to be to get people into work. And if you look at our debt to GDP, it was 250% after the Second World War. It took until 1963 to get that down to 100%. We then went and got it down to 40%. It's now back up to 100%. We're still the sixth largest economy in the world, and yet we're not growing as an economy. And you've got all these measures which are very well-intentioned. Every one of us, as an employer, you want to look after your employees to the best way that you can. But there's got to be a balance. Because if, as you said, if it goes too far, then we cannot employ people because we cannot afford to employ the people. And that's what's happening at the moment, is the Federation of Small Business, or the CBI, of which I was president, are all saying this is a worrying situation, because it's getting to the stage where, even, for example, you have sick from day one. It used to be 4 days. Some people will misuse this, and a good big company will offer it from day one anyway. So this is a question now of, can you afford it? The two-child limit, you think about it, it seems on the face of it unfair. Why should somebody who have three children, they don't qualify? Well, there are almost 200,000 people, they've calculated, on benefits with three children, and this is going to now raise the cost of that. A lot of that is very genuine, and I think those people deserve it. But look at the rights from day one. The government at the moment, it used to be 2 years. We fought in the House of Lords, and we've now at least got 6 months. So you've got that 6 months window, which we didn't have before. Saying this is a situation that at the moment, where AI around the corner, as you've just mentioned, 9 million people of working age who are not working, including the 1 million young people that you've just spoken about, Ian. How long can this go on for? And if you put up taxes to their highest burden since in 80 years, and by the way, the previous government has a lot to blame for it, because they were the ones who put up taxes to the highest burden. Yep. It's only got worse over the last 2 years. You cannot grow an economy by putting up taxes and increasing government expenditure. You can't. It just doesn't work. You've got to grow it by reducing taxes and reducing expenditure, making more efficiencies in public sector spending. And the welfare bill is about to go up in the next few years to £400 billion. Can we afford that as a country? And we've got to get things back in balance now. Of course you want workers to have rights. Any good employer wants the best rights for their employees and will look after their employees well. And that is what any good company will do. We all want to do that. But it's, can you afford? Look at the hospitality industry. Pubs are closing because they cannot afford it. Business rates have gone up. Then you've got the inheritance tax that affected businesses and farmers as well, which many people think is very unfair, where you've got assets but you don't have the cash, and then you're going to have the breakup of family firms and the breakup of farms, which is going to be an effect from today as well. So all these You're trying to encourage business growth. You're trying to encourage employment. But if you make those things more difficult, it's going to backfire with all the best intentions that this government has. And I do believe they have the best intentions.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. That's Lord Karen Billamoria there. So I wonder what you think. Do you think that this Employment Rights Act is actually going to be really good for workers, or do you fear that it could cause more unemployment? 0345 6060 973. Now, some breaking news from Reuters. Iran and the United States have received a plan to end hostilities that could come into effect today and reopen the Strait of Hormuz, a source aware of the proposals has said. A framework to end hostilities has been put together by Pakistan and exchanged with Iran and the US overnight, the source said, outlining a two-tier approach with an immediate ceasefire followed by a comprehensive agreement. That doesn't strike me as something that is going to go very far, but we'll bring you more on that a little bit later in the hour. Right, let's continue our discussion on the Employment Rights Act and also the other measures that are coming in today, which will benefit many workers. Abhi Jitendra is Principal Policy Advisor for the anti-poverty charity, the Joseph Rantree Foundation. Abhi, good morning to you. Do you welcome all these proposals, or do you also accept that extra burdens on business will mean for your jobs?
So first of all, thanks so much for having me on, and thanks so much for covering this really important topic. I think that the first thing that we should say is that in-work poverty and job insecurity for millions of workers is a reality, and completely take the message from Lord Billamoria that we need to keep the balance between workers' rights and business interests. But we can't shy away from the reality that lots of workers, 1.2 million workers, in fact, for example, are on zero-hours contracts and up until today had absolutely no protections from unfair dismissal. And our latest research found that while 8% of workers were in-work poverty, 28% of part-time workers who are more insecure and 22% of the self-employed were in-work poverty. So this is a reality. Now, to your question, I think that the security that these workers, many of these workers, are now going to enjoy because of the measures that will come into force is something that really should be celebrated. You know, zero-hours contracts going to be much harder to have. Rights, day one rights, are a big improvement from the previous status quo. You know, a dad who is now able to have some time off when they start a new job, which they wouldn't have had before. That's a big impact also on the life of a child.
Why should someone have time off when they've only on day one of a new job?
So, I mean, it's sort of how you think about it. We think there are some really important things, you know, a core set of protections like being able to have time off when you have a child, being able to take time off when you are sick. You know, this basically brings many of the protections which workers have in Europe to the UK. It's not a radical extension. And this is something which think tanks like the Resolution Foundation and others have made the case for. You know, this is not about whacking lots of, burdens on business. This is about a measured set of protections, which we think everyone should have. And to the point around paternity leave and other protections for people with newborns, those are actually funded by the government. So that's
well, funded by the taxpayer. Yeah, nothing's funded by the government. It's the taxpayer that funds it all.
Yeah, but to use the example of paternity leave, that's only 2 weeks of quite a low level. So actually, that's not a huge burden at all on the taxpayer, and arguably we need to be more generous on that front. And using the example of sick pay, I think Lord Billamoria said that, you know, there are most firms already offer their workers that, and most firms want to. Well, lots of firms don't. Lots of firms.
But why should they be obliged to?
Paid workers, because we think it's important in this economy that people do have time off during sickness, and there are impacts of making people work when they're sick that, you know, we learned in the pandemic and we seem to have forgotten. You know, it's important for people to have time off when they're sick. And it's not great for the employer to expect people to work through their sickness, and actually makes them less productive. We actually had some research out which looked at care providers and found that the low pay and the sort of poor conditions in the care sector are actually piling costs onto business and making it more expensive to hire, to retrain, you know, having all this turnover. So I think it's important that we tell the whole story of this. These are protections which are limited. They are going to some more people. They will make an impact, but they are not completely changing the structure of protections we have in this country. And that my final point on this would be, these are really popular. These are really, really popular. When you talk about reducing 0 hours contracts, when you talk about day one rights, these are things which the people can get behind. And, you know, in a time when it's really hard to get people to understand government policy and support it, these are a few policies in a sea of things which most people haven't heard of, many people might not support, that actually do have popular support. So I think any party, any individual who is saying that that they're not for this are you know, disagreeing with a large swathe of the population who do think workers' rights being strengthened are a good thing.
Sometimes it's government's job to do the unpopular thing. And particularly when we live in such a competitive world, and we are competing with other European countries for investment, inward investment from other countries, they look at our tax situation, they look at our employment situation, and they will make a judgment over whether this country is better to invest in than, for example, France. And according to much of the commentary today in the papers, our employment regulations now are more onerous on employers than those in France, which has never been the case before. And it's be careful what you wish for, I think, is maybe a phrase that is appropriate here.
I do think, though, and again, I really do take the point on balance. You know, we think it's really important that the economy works for businesses and for workers. But if you look at, for example, you know, unfair dismissal rules, the government did compromise on those. And now we have unfair dismissal rules that are broadly in line with other European countries. So I don't really take the argument that, you know, we are becoming significantly, you know, less competitive than other countries. And actually, many European countries have very, very similar, you know, debt issues and tax raising issues that we do in this country. So this is more about taking issues in the round and looking at what workers want, what the public want, and doing sensible, I think, and impactful things which will reduce job insecurity for many workers.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. That's Abhi Jitendra there from the Joseph Rowntree Foundation. If you've got views on this, do you think that I'm overcooking it here, saying that these regulations are going to make us uncompetitive? I think put together with our tax regime now, they most certainly will, but you may have a different view. 20 past eight, news headlines with Dominic Ellis.
It's reported Iran and the United States have received a ceasefire plan from Pakistan that could come into effect today. Health officials say people should seek care as normal during a six-day strike by resident doctors in England. And a series of changes to tax and benefits have come into force this morning. LBC weather, a settled day for large parts of the UK, staying dry and sunny for many, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Embarking Ripple Road remains closed eastbound at Stag Island, and that's because of an accident that happened earlier and the investigation works continue. In Hammersmith, the traffic lights on the Talgarth Road aren't working at Hammersmith bus station, so do take care. And also on the South Circular Road, the traffic lights on the Upper Richmond Road aren't working at Putney High Street. The A40 remains closed again today between the Northern Roundabout and the Marylebone Flyover, so definitely do expect delays. The diversion route is the M4 and the A4. Avanti West Coast and London North Western are running to and from Euston, and that's up to Milton Keynes for the ongoing works.
This is LBC.
Save up to 50% in the Dunelm Spring event. We've got huge savings on thousands of products, from bedding and furniture to decorating ideas, hosting heroes and more, so you can refresh your home for less. Don't miss the Dunelm Spring event, with up to 50% off in-store, online and on the Dunelm app now. Dunelm, the home of homes. T's and C's apply.
LBC.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less. Irish Ferries, see you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
Get that Toyota electric feeling with the all-new, all-electric Toyota Urban Cruiser. Available with 0% APR representative and £1,500 deposit contribution. And save £1,500 with the Toyota Electrified Saving. Visit your nearest Toyota centre. Price from £299.95. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 30th of June 2026. Optional final payment. Indemnities may be required. See website. Conditions apply.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You, the daddy of air conditioning. For over 15 years, Cool You have specialised in installing our fully internal aircon systems throughout London. With no mess, no fuss, and no external condenser. And from April the 10th to the 19th, come and meet me and the team at the Ideal Home Show, London Olympia. Daddy cool. Cool You for a cool, comfortable home.
At Wix, the Home and Garden event is now on. Save on Dulux Standard 2.5-litre coloured emulsion. Was £24, now £16. Shop today. Terms apply.
This is LBC with Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060973.
8:23 on LBC. Ian says, after 14 years of the Tories, Labour are looking after the workers and the low paid. It was all in the manifesto and the public voted for it. And Marshall says, it's radical and on the side of the employee. In capital letters, very Trumpian. Bill says, I work in Germany and enjoy a much higher standard of workers' rights than I did in the UK. Companies afford it and employment is secure. British workers deserve the same. All I would say is look at the state of the German economy at the moment. Remy says, the welfare state was created to provide a safety net for those that never need it, not to encourage the getting of things and benefits for free or too easily. The idea must be to get people working, producing, contributing to the state and taking personal responsibility for their lives. Freebies are never a substitute for contributory and productive graft. And Beverly says, Ian, this government has absolutely zero credibility whatsoever when it comes to how businesses operate. Today, it's now more financially attractive to be unemployed and the myriad of benefits. It's no wonder there are a plethora of NEETs. Why? Why would they? It's not worth getting out of bed for when your mate next door gets to step in, sleep in, and the rent is paid. The rest is pretty much pocket money. Today, those who've decided to continue having children despite not being able to afford them will be better off than myself and others. Well, some fairly strong views there on both sides. We'll come to your calls on this in a second, but let's just catch up with the latest on this Kanye West controversy, because politicians from across the major parties have weighed in on the debate as to whether the controversial rapper Kanye West should be banned from performing at the Wireless Festival this summer, including, of course, the leader of the Liberal Democrats, Sir Ed Davey, who spoke with LBC last week.
This is a person who wrote a song saying, Heil Hitler, praising Adolf Hitler. I can't think of anything more anti-Semitic. Now, the Australian government has earlier banned him from going to Australia for his anti-Semitic hate speech, and we should too. The Home Secretary should ban him from coming to this country.
Well, let's talk to Stephen Silverman, Director of Investigations at Enforcement at the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. Stephen, very good morning. Now, a lot more people over the last 24 hours seem to be saying that Kanye West shouldn't be granted a visa to come to the country, let alone perform at this festival. I don't know what the rules are on that for the Home Secretary to not grant a visa. It's something to do with not being conducive to the public good, I think. What's the case for that?
You're absolutely right, Ian. The government can ban anyone from entering the UK who is not a citizen and whose presence would, and I using the precise language, would not be conducive to the public good. And what's interesting about this is that the Prime Minister has condemned this, and as he has so frequently over the last 2.5 years, he's taken the view that anti-Semitism has no place in our society and that Jews should not be marginalized. And yet those words have never been followed up with strong action. And what's happening here yet again is it's being left to the sponsors to take the principled stand. So far, Pepsi and Diageo have pulled out, and this thing seems to have a life of its own now. And it seems quite likely that others will too. But this government could very easily ban Kanye West from entering the country, but that isn't happening.
What do you make of the fact that Pepsi and Diageo have withdrawn their sponsorship from this wireless festival? I don't know how many other sponsors are involved, but presumably you would call on all the sponsors to withdraw.
I absolutely would. That would be the correct principled thing to do in a situation such as this. But I think the question remains as to why the organizers of the Wireless Festival thought it was appropriate to invite Kanye West to headline the event. That's quite astonishing.
Thank you very much indeed. That's Stephen Silverman there from the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. Right, let's go to your calls on workers' rights and making Britain competitive. Or uncompetitive, as it may be. Manesh is in Southall. Hi, Manesh.
Hello, Ian. How are you, my friend?
Good, thank you. What would you like to tell us?
Well, it's the first time I speak to you in the morning. Normally, I have evening with you.
A treat for us both.
Yeah. Look, I think this government just doesn't get it. They're just clueless. And they've got to realise that when you have a capitalist society and a world going on in a free market economy, trying to impose left-wing views on this and have controls on salaries and bringing stuff in, they're not helping the people. First of all, you've got 10 million people unemployed, and they're trying to encourage
Sorry, 10 million? Where's that come from?
I don't know. Well, we can call it 5 million, 10 million, whatever you want.
No, let's stick to the actual figures. The unemployment is around 1.5 million.
Okay, 1.5 million unemployed, and they want to encourage the private sector to take on these workers, but then they're forcing them on them because they're paying, the government using taxpayers' money is actually paying for these people right now and subsidizing them. So they want to get them off their books. So the easiest way is to say, look, let's pass the buck on to the private sector. They can deal with it, you know, broad shoulders and all that. But at the end of the day, it's not going to help because people who want to grow their businesses, they want to take on employees as assets, not as liabilities. So when you shift someone on day one, they can go on to benefits and this and that and, you know, not turn up to work and whatever. But in the old days, it was simple. You come on to a job. Yeah, we as employers to test you out and see if the shoe fits, and if it works, you know, there's a probationary period of 6 months. But all that's gone out the window with this new Employment Rights Act. And, you know, well, what are you going to do? Most businesses I know are outsourcing their industry work now because they're so scared of the rules and regulations and the bureaucracy that this government's coming in. And when AI comes in, believe me, it's going to get a hell of a lot worse, trust me.
Well, I'm being inundated with people saying something similar to David in Woking, who says, I'm on the board of a company based in Woking. We employ 60 people. All hiring is stopped. She has clearly never run a business. I think that was a reference to the guest from the Joseph Rowntree Foundation. And look, I'm hearing that all over the place. And this is not sort of the odd business. This is virtually everybody who's just stopping hiring. And this is going to become an unemployment epidemic if we're not careful. And I don't think the government has a clue that this is what is about to happen. Manesh, thank you very much indeed. Let's get the latest news headlines on LBC at 8:31 with Dominic Ellis.
It's reported that Iran and the US have received a plan to end the conflict in the Middle East. The framework, which had been put together by Pakistan, includes an immediate ceasefire and the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz. Washington and Tehran are yet to respond. NHS England is urging patients not to put off seeking care ahead of a six-day walkout by resident doctors tomorrow. Officials say patients should attend planned appointments unless they've been contacted to reschedule. And a host of benefits and the state pension are rising from today. As the new financial year begins, most benefits are going up by 3.8% and pensions will increase by 4.8%. LBC weather, a settled day for large parts of the UK, staying dry with sunny spells, a high of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
Get 25% off coffee and pastries at Cafe Nero with Comparsa Market. Take it away, Sergei.
I need a Nero. I'm holding up for a Nero to get a flat white. It's gotta be strong, and it's gotta taste good, and it's gonna be made just right. I need a Nero.
Only with the Compare the Market app, the simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product, one membership a year, 25% off barista-made drinks and pastries at only two codes per day. Exclusions and T's and C's apply.
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity. We actually reward you for it. That's why, when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power. Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Morrison to Lidl and saving £41 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/you save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award winning own brands, and your fresh value of the day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value. Prices check 26 of the 3rd, 26. Morrison also sell other products. See online for more details.
Your time is valuable. Your perspective should be too. The Economist cuts through the noise with the stories that truly shape your world.
How can you believe that a new regime won't crush you just like the previous one?
Online scams are stranger than they've ever been.
When the world's turned upside down, know which way is up. Read, watch, or listen to The Economist.
At Wickes, the Home and Garden event is now on. Save on Dulux Standard 2.5-litre coloured emulsion. Was £24, now £16. Shop today. Terms apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
8:34 on LBC. Okato says, you're sounding like you have a better option. I absolutely do. Because I think what we need to do to get ourselves out of this economic hole that we not only are in, but are about to become in a lot deeper, is to create what Margaret Thatcher used to call an enterprise economy, where you actually incentivize people to start their own businesses, to expand their businesses, to take on more people. At the moment, this government is doing exactly the opposite. All of their policies seem to be designed to stifle an enterprise economy. So that's my alternative. And there are all sorts of things that you can do. I mean, I haven't got time to go into all of the things that you could do. And I'm not suggesting that you just sort of copy and paste Thatcher's enterprise economy policies to 2026. I mean, we're in a very different age. But there are things government can do to stimulate an economy and to encourage businesses to expand. But this government is not doing any of those things. That's what I complain about. And the fact, here's a statistic for you. For the first time now, we are spending more on benefits, on welfare benefits, than we're taking in income tax. That's the first time that's ever happened. Now, that is frightening. And if you don't think that's frightening, how do you think government is financed? Because it's either financed by taxes or by borrowing. There isn't really any other way of financing our welfare state and all the public services that we have. There really isn't. And we've got to live in the real world, not this world where we would love to spend lots more money on all sorts of weird and wonderful things. We can't do it if the money isn't there. So do you think the government is on the side of welfare over workers? That's the accusation that is being thrown at them. Alison's in Bury St Edmunds. Alison, very good morning to you. What would you like to tell me?
Oh, morning, Ian, and lovely to talk to you in the morning. Lovely. I run a small business in Bury St Edmunds, quite a very small business. But before I kind of make my points, I just want to say I'm not taking away anything from you know, all those businesses who we've heard about and are struggling and are closing, it, obviously, you know, it is happening. But I think we need to put a couple of positive points in it. And for once, I'm going to agree with Kemi Badenoch. You know, the country is not broken. We need to stop being so negative. We need to try and be a bit more positive. And, you know, out of positivity come good things. I'm not saying it's a magic, you know, rainbows and unicorns thing, but we do need to be a little bit more positive. Now, with regards to the new bill, I worked in a GP surgery for many years, and we had our own sick pay on our contract, and we were paid sick pay from day one. You know, and a lot of businesses do that. You know, you don't have to have the waiting period. So what the government are proposing already happens in a lot of businesses. On average last year, the sick days was 9.5 days. Now, at the moment, or last year, you were going to get paid for just over 5 of those. Now you get paid for all of them. If you've got a family and you've got the dad who goes out to work, mum goes out to work, but they've got benefits as top up, if their pay drops drastically because they're not getting paid for all of those, their benefits increase. So by sharing the burden with the employers, so the employers pay them for all their sick pays, but they're on a benefit as a top up, that will then decrease. So I can see the logic in that. As for the employer's national insurance contribution, there's a grant that employers can get. And last year, the government put it up from £5,000 to £10,500. Now, this is my second year of anybody I employ where I don't pay employer's national insurance for. So there's that as well. And as for 0 hours contracts, some people love them. Now, I don't agree with people being exploited through them, but some people do them as choice. And I, you know, I run my own business and I also work part-time in other places. So there are some positives. It's not all negative.
Well, I think they have changed what they were planning to do on 0 hours contracts, because they went into the election, I think, wanting to ban them completely. And look, whenever you will have heard this, whenever I've done phone-ins on this on my evening show, there are people, like single mothers, students, for example, who do not want to get rid of 0 hours contracts because they like the flexibility that they afford them. Now, you're right, that there are employers who've abused them, and they need to be called out, and action does need to be taken there. I completely agree with that. But overall, if you create an environment where business thinks that it is being overregulated, and there are no incentives to expand, or few incentives to expand, then we are going to get into a doom loop in our economy.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think we're heading there. I'm afraid to say I do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, hopefully, well, with the, shall we say, the increased revenue from taxes at the moment, and obviously we all know where that's coming from, maybe something will change. Maybe there will be some incentives coming from November when the Chancellor puts her statement out. We don't know. I think they're on a bit of a sticky wicket at the minute because everything's up in the air. You know, we don't know what a certain man in the White House is going to do. And I'm not blaming it all on that. It's not. This has been coming for, you know, several years. Like you said, you know, at the beginning of this hour, you said, you know, that there are things the Conservatives have done that have added to this. So it's historic, but we just have to try and be a little bit more positive. I mean, all we see at the minute is negative, negative, negative. There's not very often a good news story. I know there's not many around at the moment, but we just need to try and be a bit more positive.
That's the thing. Bad news is news. Good news is advertising. That as the phrase goes. But I'll tell you what. We have got later in the show, Alison. We have got some good news, because last night,
perfect.
I went to see the Magic Faraway Tree.
Oh, was it good?
It was excellent, and we're going to talk a little about that. About that, because we are LB serious, but a little about that at the end of the programme. Alison, thank you very much indeed. Now, interesting story here. Councils have been urged to crack down on misuse of blue badge parking permits as the proportion of people holding them has reached a record 1 in 20. Well, let's get more on this from Dr. Shani Danda, who's an accessibility consultant and disability activist. Very good morning to you, Shani. How is the system being abused? Because, as I understand it, these things are quite difficult to get.
Morning. Yes, you're absolutely right. It's not easy to get a badge. But what happens is, you know, if you are eligible, you get posted out a physical badge that once perhaps you no longer need it or it falls into the wrong hands, the councils have no way of getting it back. And because councils are not consistently enforcing spot checking or misuse, people are getting away with using them in manners that they shouldn't. Like people's friends and family using them. Let's say if someone's passed away who was a blue badge holder, somebody else in the family will continue to use it. These are stories that I personally know of as well. So it's misuse once the badge has been issued.
So what happens? So my friend Jenny is staying with us at the moment and she's got one of these badges. So if I surreptitiously nick it off her and go and park somewhere in the town centre using it, what sanctions would I be up for if I was caught? I'm not going to do it, by the way, but just as an example.
Good to know. Yeah, it really depends. It depends on what that council chooses to do as enforcement. And as I said, it's not consistent. So some councils are really good and they're really on it. It can include, going on a course, a bit like a speed awareness course. It can include a fine if you're a repeat offender. But sometimes it could just be, a telling off or a bit of a warning. But most of the time, because councils say that they can't afford to hire an enforcement officer to police blue badge misuse, quite often people are getting away with it. And what that means is those of us that have blue badges, we're not able to access society. We're not able to be active members of society and go about our lives and do the things we need to.
I mean, it is a pretty reprehensible thing to do, to basically exploit someone else's disability, isn't it?
It is. And I think if you don't have a badge or if you don't experience barriers in the outside world, you might think the badge is a bit of a perk. It gives you closer parking, or sometimes it can mean you get free parking. But honestly, it isn't. And I've been a blue badge holder from a very young age because I was born with my disability. So my parents had it for me. And now as a driver myself, I have it now. I've only ever known life with a badge. And on two occasions I've had it stolen. And my world completely turned on its head. I didn't realise how much I relied on it until I didn't have it for that period of time. And I do think people just think it's a bit of a perk, but it isn't. It means the difference of disabled people going out or not. And life's already hard when the world isn't designed for you.
And what's the qualification for getting one?
It's different. So there's a way in which you can automatically be eligible if, let's say, you're in receipt of PIP or other types of benefits, because you will have already been assessed adequately. But there are other ways to be assessed. So it could be just applying directly through the council. And also it is worth mentioning here that for a long time, the blue badge was only applicable to those people who had mobility-related health conditions and impairments. But in recent years, the eligibility has widened now. So people that have non-visible health conditions and impairments can be eligible. People with autism, people with conditions like dementia, mental health conditions, they too are eligible. But unfortunately, we haven't had an increase in bays. So if I'm being truthfully honest, finding an empty accessible bay is kind of feeling like winning the lottery.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning. That's Dr. Shani Danda, an accessibility consultant and disability activist. Now, in a moment, we are going to talk a little bit more about Iran with this new peace plan being proposed by Pakistan. But first, a text from Tina, who says, "The Magic Faraway Tree by Enid Blyton is my favourite children's book." Well, that's why I went to see it. But then she says, I'm scared to see it, just in case they've ruined it. Well, look, we're going to be talking about this at 10 to 10. They haven't ruined it. They have updated it. There's a little bit of wokiness in it, but I really enjoyed it. But I nearly didn't enjoy it for reasons that I will explain at 10 to 10. There's a tease for you. It's 8:46, News Headlines with Dominic Ellis.
Iran and the United States have reportedly received a plan to end the conflict in the Middle East. NHS England is urging people not to put off seeking care ahead of a six-day walkout by resident doctors tomorrow. And a series of benefits in the state pension arising from this morning as the new financial year begins. LBC weather, a settled day for large parts of the UK, staying dry with sunny spells, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are restrictions on the North Circular Road eastbound at Staples Corner, and that's because of an accident at the roadworks section. Also in Barking, Ripple Road is closed eastbound at Stag Island because of the ongoing investigation. The traffic lights on the South Circular Road at Putney High Street aren't working, so do expect delays. Now on the trains, the West Coast mainline works continue, so Avanti West Coast and London Northwestern aren't running between Milton Keynes and Euston, which also means the Lioness line is part suspended with no service between Euston and Willesden Junction, and no Bakerloo line trains as well running between Stonebridge Park and Harrow and Wealdstone.
This is LBC.
Combine your pensions with Pension B and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. That's why right now you can get a £250 gift card when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. And the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. Start a new policy before the 28th of May. New customers over 50 only. Terms and conditions apply.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day, so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big motoring world. We're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
The weather's warmer, the days are longer, and the savings are even better in the Hillary Spring Sale. Right now, there's up to 40% off hundreds of made-to-measure styles. Plus, get an extra 10% off everything in our flash event, including our total blackout blinds for complete darkness and a good night's sleep. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, an extra 10% off everything ends the 13th of April. Conditions apply.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Morrison to Lidl and saving £41 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/you save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands, and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value. Prices check 26 of the 3rd, 26. Morrison does sell other products. See online for more details.
This is LBC. Message Ian Dale on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
8:50 on LBC. On bank holidays, there's often not a lot of breaking news. Well, today is an exception because Iran and the United States have received a plan to end hostilities that could come into effect today and reopen the Strait of Hormuz. A framework to end hostilities has been put together by Pakistan and exchanged with Iran and the US overnight. And it outlines a two-tier approach with an immediate ceasefire followed by a comprehensive agreement. Now, all elements need to be agreed today, said the source from Reuters, adding the initial understanding would be structured as a memorandum of understanding finalised electronically through Pakistan, the sole communications channel in the talks. Now, Axios first reported yesterday that the US, Iran and regional mediators were discussing a potential 45-day ceasefire as part of a two-phase deal that could lead to a permanent end to the war, citing US, Israeli and regional sources. Now, the source told Reuters that Pakistan's army chief, Field Marshal Asim Munir, has been in contact all night long with US Vice President J.D. Vance, Special Envoy Steve Witkoff and Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi. Now, under the proposal, a ceasefire would take effect immediately, reopening the Strait of Hormuz with 15 to 20 days to finalise a broader settlement. The deal, tentatively dubbed the Islamabad Accord, would include a regional framework for the Strait, with final in-person talks in Islamabad. Well, is this likely to succeed? Nicholas Hopton is a former British ambassador to Iran, distinguished fellow at RUSI and Director General of the Middle East Association. Nicholas, very good morning to you. What hope do you have that this might actually lead somewhere?
Good morning. I think we need to be very cautious in our reaction to this, but it is definitely the right kind of development at this stage, and one that many who have thought that this war was misconceived and was actually very damaging to all parties concerned and the global economy and security more generally, many people will be welcoming this, and I would be amongst those. Whether it succeeds, we've had false dawns before. The US president is unpredictable. He may change his mind later today. And as you know, there is the threat, he's made the threat, to bomb Iran back to the Stone Age tomorrow if they don't open the Strait of Hormuz by then. So I think the timing is significant. I think it's also very significant to see that J.D. Vance is negotiating on behalf of the US government, which he's been very quiet throughout this conflict, clearly not particularly in favour of the war himself, I would guess, given that his previous positions being anti-war. But I think that on the Iranian side, you've got Abbas Araghchi, who is an experienced Iranian diplomat who was the main interlocutor for the Iranians in the peace talks that were taking, or the deal talks that were taking place immediately before the war. So you've got the right people around the table. Pakistanis are well placed to broker it, given their proximity to China, Russia, and Saudi Arabia, and obviously bordering Iran as well. This is the best hope we've seen in the 5 weeks of war so far. But let's hold our breath, because it could all go very pear-shaped very quickly.
Is Pakistan trusted by the American administration?
Oh, I don't know if trust would be the word I'd use. I mean, the Pakistanis are an important player. They're a nuclear power. They have, as I say, important relations within the region, but also globally. They are very tried and tested as diplomats. They haven't been directly involved in brokering deals between Iran and the US before. Other countries have done that. But those other countries, I'm sure, will be working with the Pakistanis to try and get a result on this. It's in everyone's interests, almost without exception, that a deal is done quickly now and the Strait of Hormuz is open. The global economy can then start to recover from the huge damage that's been done to it. But more importantly, the people of the region can live in security. The war can stop. Innocent civilians will stop being killed on a daily basis. And then we can see whether it's possible to achieve a more stable Middle East in the future through a period of ceasefire leading to a more permanent deal in the longer term.
Nicholas, thank you very much indeed. That's Nicholas Hopton, former British ambassador to Iran. Right, back to your calls on the Employment Rights Act. Is it going to make Britain uncompetitive? Do you think that the government is on the side of welfare more than it's on the side of workers and businesses? Joe is in Romford. Hi, Joe.
Morning. I heard something really hilarious. There's no enforcement officers for the council. Get a parking ticket. Watch how quick them enforcement officers turn
up.
Yeah,
quite.
No, I just think it gives employees the opportunity to be more autonomous, encourage them to be self-employed, maybe teach that from school on how people can be more autonomous. And because employers don't have dictatorship, their entitlement, and they're throwing their toys out their pram.
I don't think anybody's throwing their toys out of the pram. I think people are just pointing out that some of these measures are going to make us less competitive.
Well, the thing is, no matter what's done with the best of intentions, someone somewhere at some point will find a loophole and abuse it. So, yes, zero-hour contracts. They will help people in many different predicaments, but ultimately they are abused. The welfare state is proof of that. It has the best of intentions, but at some point, someone somewhere, on a multitude of people, are going to abuse it. So it doesn't matter what systems you put in place, someone's going to abuse it. So if you have to minimise the systems, so there is some level of abuse, but less abuse, That's where we're at.
I totally agree with you. That is the role of government, to try and make sure that people do abide by the rules. And if they're not abiding by the rules, then you have to make those rules more stringent. I think it's interesting to note on zero-hours contracts that they have gone back on their original proposals, which meant that there would have been no zero-hours contracts at all. But they did see sense, and they've mitigated those proposals.
Yeah, there are, like I said, it does help some people in certain circumstances. Personally, I've seen it abused. Not myself, I've not been on one, but I've seen the levels that it can be abused. I just think that it's doing something, that's a bit of a coin phrase, doing something is better than doing nothing. So attempting to do something is better than just sitting on their hands and letting the bad apple continue.
Well, up to a point, because the worst thing you can do is just respond to the something must be done brigade, because sometimes if you act in haste, you can repent at leisure because you do something that is actually quite damaging. Joe, thank you. Michael's in Brentwood. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Ian. Been a while. Could I just say a couple of points just from the other side? So some of it's mood, some of it's factual. So I think people after 14 years of Tories and no wage rises are really angry, and something needs to be done about wages. I don't think people like multimillionaires telling you they can't afford £10 an hour. And businesses don't seem to complain when all their low-paid workers are being massively, massively subsidised by taxpayers for topping up their wages and paying them universal credit. So something has to be equalised. When you say, are they a welfare state? Well, earning low wages makes us more of a welfare state because more people will get top up.
Yeah, and I think we've got to move gradually. You can't do this overnight, but we've gradually got to surely move back to the system where if you're in work, you shouldn't need benefits. But
it's 14 years, Ian, since we had wages that matched inflation. It's not overnight. We have to do something. Businesses have to pay.
I'm not talking about wages. I mean, yes, obviously everyone wants to be paid more wages, but it's sort of like wanting a land flowing with milk and honey, isn't it? We all want the ideal situation where we're all paid as much as possible. But the fact is, after the financial crash, it wasn't possible to do that for many businesses. And if they had been mandated to do it by massive increases in the minimum wage, well, we all know what would have happened.
All the financial institutions, the ones who actually caused the financial crash, didn't really suffer in the way that ordinary people have suffered.
Well, some of them did. Not all, but some of them did.
Yeah, but as you said, there's still massive banking organisations that I've worked for that are still going now. And, you know, nothing really happened to the people who did the damage. So the problem is people are fed up now. They are kind of saying, you know, hold on. Any time somebody says to you, I can't really afford to take, how much did you earn last year? How much did your company earn? What did you earn in dividend? And how much percentage tax did you pay? Because I'm paying a lot of tax. So, you know, I want to know those questions when you tell me you can't afford something.
Well, and in big companies, you can find out that information. Michael, thank you very much indeed. Now, coming up in the next hour, a Waitrose employee has been sacked after stopping a shoplifter from taking Easter eggs. How can we ever expect to tackle shoplifting if this is the approach that supermarkets take? It's a most amazing story. Now, the growing population of fat jabs is expected to increase Britain's divorce rates. Has the decline desire to lose weight come between you and your partner? And
what is this place? The Magic Faraway Tree.
It's amazing.
That was the trailer for The Magic Faraway Tree. The film has been adapted from the Enid Blyton classic. What's Enid Blyton's legacy? And if you've been to see the film, did you like it as much as I did?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, it's reported Iran and the United States have received a plan to end the war between the two countries. Any such deal would need to be agreed today. President Trump has set a deadline of tomorrow for Tehran to reopen the Strait of Hormuz.
LBC's reporter Fraser Knight is following developments.
At this stage, these are just proposals which still need to be agreed, but reports suggest that Pakistan has presented this plan to both Iran and the United States for a ceasefire, which would then give them 15 to 20 days to come up with a broader agreement for ending the war. Now, included in that proposal, it's claimed, is a plan to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Of course, Donald Trump had threatened to blow up the whole country of Iran if they didn't reopen that waterway by tomorrow night.
An Iranian official says Tehran won't be pressured into deadlines and won't reopen the Strait of Hormuz as part of any temporary ceasefire. NHS England is urging people not to put off seeking care ahead of a six-day walkout by resident doctors tomorrow. Officials say patients should attend planned appointments unless they're contacted to reschedule. A series of changes to tax and benefits are coming into force this morning. It means millions of people receiving universal credit or a state pension will see their payments increase. Most benefits will go up by 3.8% and pensions increasing by 4.8%. The two-child benefit cap has also been scrapped. Financial analyst Danny Hewson has more details for LBC.
If you have more than two children, you will get, and you claim benefits, you will start to get additional cash. So, for example, a family with three children will get an average rise of about £4,100 a year. So about 480,000 families are set to benefit from this.
The drinks company Diageo has joined Pepsi in withdrawing its sponsorship of Wireless Festival after Kanye West was announced as the headliner. Keir Starmer called the booking deeply concerning following the rapper's previous anti-Semitic remarks and use of Nazi imagery. West is due to play three nights at the London event in July. And the four astronauts on NASA's Artemis II mission are preparing to fly around the far side of the moon tonight. They won't be able to speak with mission control temporarily as radio communications will be blocked by the moon. LBC weather, a settled day for large parts of the UK, staying dry with sunny spells, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Subway knows you're on the hunt for the perfect shawarma chicken. Well, people, you're in luck. How about one on freshly baked bread or even a wrap? Then there's the juicy, tender shawarma chicken pieces marinated in a traditional blend of rich, aromatic spices, topped with your fave fresh salad and drenched in a garlicky, tangy, yogurty sauce. The new shawarma spice chicken, now at Subway.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Three minutes past nine. Welcome to Weekend Breakfast with me, Ian Dale. I'll be here with you until 10. Nick Ferrari's back tomorrow. You'll be relieved to hear. Shall I tell you something funny? It's sparked by this text from Bruce. He says, you went to see the magic faraway tree rather than watch West Ham in the FA Cup quarter final. No wonder you lost. Now, I can either tell this story now or I can tell it sort of later in the programme. I'm going to tell it now because it'll make you listen later in the programme, because I couldn't get a ticket to see West Ham yesterday. So I've been staying in a hotel just off Leicester Square. So I went to see the West Ham v Leeds match in a pub called the Three Lanterns. And at 85 minutes, we were losing 2-0. And I'd already arranged to go and see the Magic Faraway Tree with my friend Grant Tucker. And so I walked from the Three Lanterns to the Odeon in Leicester Square, a five-minute walk. By the time I got to the Odeon, West Ham had equalised. And so I thought, well, what do I do? Because there's going to be extra time, maybe penalties. So the film started at about 5:07, and I sat there in the cinema with my AirPods in, listening to the commentary while watching the Magic Faraway Tree for the first, like, 25 minutes of the film. I've never done that before. It was a slightly odd experience, and I kept whispering to Grant. I said, you can't hear the commentary in my AirPods, can you? It's because I didn't want anybody to be disturbed. And then, of course, we lost on penalties. So that was my story of watching the Magic Faraway Tree, but I did really enjoy it, and we'll talk about it right towards the end of the programme. But first, I want to talk about this. I mean, this is the kind of story that you would normally expect to read in a tabloid newspaper, but it's half a page in The Guardian, it's half a page in The Daily Telegraph. Waitrose A Waitrose employee of 17 years has described his devastation after being sacked for stopping a shoplifter who had ransacked a display of Lindt Gold Bunny Easter eggs. Walker Smith, a shop assistant at a branch of Waitrose at Clapham Junction, South London, was going about his normal duties when a customer stopped him. "They told me someone has filled up a Waitrose bag with the eggs," he said. The 54-year-old said the shoplifter was a repeat offender. After spotting the thief, he grabbed the bag from the shoplifter, who'd snatched it back, and he said there was a struggle for a few seconds before it snapped. The Easter eggs, which retail for £13 each, fell to the floor, and the shoplifter made a dash for the exit. Smith said one of the bunnies broke into pieces. He picked a piece up and threw it in front of frustration towards some shopping trolleys, not aiming it at the shoplifter. He was then sacked by the Waitrose management. Can you believe that? Now, I have a bit of skin in this game because I used to run a bookshop and I had a few shoplifters. Now, if any member of my staff had tackled a shoplifter like he did, I would have wanted to give them a pay rise, not sack them. But this is the sort of ridiculous thing we have now, where shops order their employees not to tackle shoplifters. So is it any wonder that we have a shoplifting crisis of epidemic proportions? What are Waitrose thinking? This man had worked for them for 17 years. I mean, to me, he's a hero. But to them, he's just nothing. Something that they can just get rid of on a whim. Now, if the Labour government want to do something about employment rights, tackle this. I mean, he's got a cast iron case, I would have thought, for unfair dismissal. What can be done about this? How can we ever expect to tackle shoplifting if this is the approach that big supermarkets take? They're not alone in this. I mean, I'm picking on Waitrose today because they've dismissed this man, but there are plenty of other examples of where this sort of thing is happening. What kind of society are we where we're just promoting people to walk on by and not intervene if they see something illegal happening? 0345 6060 973. I mean, maybe it's just me. I mean, I'm really outraged by this, and I hope that somebody out there will offer this guy a new job, because he's now worried that he's just moved into... apparently he'd been sharing a flat for many, many years with other people, and he just got his own studio flat, and now he worries that he won't be able to pay for it. I mean, that's... actions have consequences, and when big companies take actions against the little people, and I'm sure Walker Smith won't mind me describing him as... well, I hope he won't mind me describing him as that. I mean, it is an outrage, isn't it? What kind of society have we become? David McKelvey is chief executive of TMI, a private company that... EYE, a private company that investigates shop theft, and a former detective chief inspector in the Metropolitan Police. David, good morning. I mean, am I missing something in this, or should everyone be as outraged as I am?
Unfortunately, and this is the way things are at the moment. I've been screaming about it for years, frustrated beyond belief. I also run another company called My Local Bobby, and we detain somewhere between 10 to 40 shoplifters every single day. And the reality is that we do not get support to prosecute those people. We prosecute in the criminal courts as a private prosecutor, and we don't get the evidence supplied by the retailers. And what's happened here, and has happened for years, the retailers have been banned hanging on about the police inefficiency, etc. But the reality is they have effectively decriminalised shoplifting by allowing this to take place. These non-intervention policies, and in many cases non-prosecution policies, have allowed criminals to just walk in the door and take what they want.
I'm going to slightly play devil's advocate here, but aren't these supermarkets just taking their lead from the police, though, who advise members of the public not to get involved in if they see somebody doing something in the street, that they should just sort of not intervene because it might be a danger to them?
No, there is that element to it. As you know, there was a, you know, security guard stabbed to death only weeks ago in Milton Keynes. But, you know, if you look at the other side of this, we are detaining these people. You know, we are actually catching them, but we're not getting supported to prosecute them. And the only thing that works, Ian, is putting these people before a court. And then, of course, you've got this new element to this in that the government has now introduced new sentencing guidelines whereby you will not go to prison for offences less than 12 months. So the door is well and truly open now to criminals to just continue their, you know, the tsunami of crime that's taking place.
When I was 14... I was caught shoplifting, and I was taken to court. And as a 14-year-old, that was quite an experience. And I never ever did it again. Now, yep. I'm wondering how often that happens to 14-year-olds now. By the way, I have told that story before. This is not a major revelation. I don't think it should be on page 17 of the Sun tomorrow. But I mean, a 14-year-old nowadays, would the same thing happen? I suspect not.
Absolutely not. No, I mean, you saw what happened in Clapham, you know. If you're a youth in these day and age, you are not going to go to court. That's the reality. Most of the shoplifters we see are not kids, are not youths. You know, they are prolific offenders. They've got drug habits. They've got alcohol addictions. And then you've got organised criminal gangs as well. But it is completely out of control. And going back to the original point, is that shop staff and security staff are told you will not intervene and you will lose your job if you do. And that's the reality of this. And it's completely wrong. And until such time as they, the retailers, start to support prosecutions, nothing's going to change.
David, thank you very much indeed. That's David McKelvey there, CEO of TMI. Brendan O'Neill is a Spectator columnist and chief politics writer at Spiked. Brendan, good morning to you. What would you do? Well, how would you change the system?
Well, I completely agree with your previous guest that we have virtually decriminalised shoplifting because there are so few consequences for it. And the lesson of all of this is that if you fail to punish crime, you give a green light to more of it. I mean, that everyone should surely understand that. And, you know, every single day now, I see people leaping over the barriers of a tube station. And I always say to the staff at the tube station, are you going to do anything about that? Are you going to stop them? And of course, they're not allowed. Just like people in shops, people at tube stations are not allowed to intervene. They're not allowed to grab someone by the scruff of the neck or, you know, like we used to have in the old days. They're not allowed to do anything like that. And so young people in particular, but not just young people, get the very distinct impression that they are allowed to shoplift. They are allowed to dodge their fares. So in terms of dealing with it, we just need to bring back consequences for criminal behaviour. That's an urgent priority, I would say.
I can remember when I didn't just have to go to court. I remember sitting in a classroom at school and seeing my dad park his car and march into the school to report me to the headmaster. And I mean, there is nothing more humiliating. Well, I suppose there is something more humiliating than that, but I can remember being hauled out of this general studies lesson. I can remember, like, second by second, what, 50 years on. And all of that experience meant that I never did it again. Why can't... And that's so logical, isn't it?
It's so logical that if you are terrified into not doing something again, you won't do it. And that's often the role that court cases and some criminal sanction, that's the role it plays. It prevents you from doing it again, or it certainly discourages that kind of behavior. But you're right to raise schools and parents and so on, because we have a real collapse of discipline in society. That's one of the key problems. And in the old days, not to be an old fart about it, but in the old days, there would be discipline in the family home. There would be discipline in schools. There would be discipline in everyday life. We used to get told off by old blokes on the bus all the time when we were kids. They would tell us to be quiet, to pipe down, you know, behave yourself. All of that infrastructure of discipline has collapsed. And it's given young people a sense that they can behave how they please. They can play their music out loud. They can nick a bag of crisps and there'll be no consequences whatsoever. We really need to restore that sense that you have a duty to be a decent, civilized member of society. And if you fail in that duty, there may be consequences. That's the kind of thing we need to bring back.
Absolutely right. Brendan, thank you very much indeed. Of course, I've opened a Pandora's box now, describing my own experience of this. Lulu in Cheltenham says, I'm curious to know what naughty young Ian pinched. Now, if you are under the age of about 40, you won't get this. I'm looking at my colleague here, Freddie, through the glass. Freddie, do you know what a pack of C90s is? He says it sounds like a football boot. Well, you see, this is the younger generation for you. No, C90 cassette tapes, blank tapes, where I would record the top 40 on each week. So it was a pack of three C90 cassette tapes. I was a very naughty boy, but I learnt my lesson. And that's the lesson we need to learn on this, isn't it? 0345 6060 973. How can we ever expect to tackle shoplifting if this approach by Waitrose is used throughout other businesses throughout the country? And I think it is. I'm not deliberately picking on Waitrose here, because there are plenty of other businesses that do this. But they need to give themselves a bit of a head shake, don't they? 16 minutes past nine, news headlines with Dominic Ellis.
Iran and the United States have reportedly received a plan to end the conflict in the Middle East. NHS England is urging people not to put off seeking care ahead of a six-day walkout by resident doctors tomorrow. And a series of benefits in the state pension arising from this morning as the new financial year begins. LBC weather, a settled day for large parts of the UK, staying dry with sunny spells, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Embarking Ripple Road remains closed eastbound at Stag Island. It's following an accident. The investigation works are taking place. All the buses that usually go that way are on diversion as well. On the South Circular Road, the traffic lights at Putney High Street aren't working, so do take care at that very busy junction. On the trains, the West Coast Main Line engineering works do continue, so that means Avanti West Coast and London Northwestern services aren't running between Euston and Milton Keynes, which also means that the Lioness line is suspended between Euston and Willesden Junction, and no Bakerloo line services between Stonebridge Park and Harrow and Wealdstone. And also on the Underground, there's no Hammersmith and City line running at all.
This is LBC.
Bowser is back.
Everyone calm down. The Super Mario Brothers can take care of the kingdom. Let's go.
This April.
Toad, pack our things.
Woohoo! The galaxy is waiting.
Who is this? Yoshi.
So some cool dinosaur just shows up and he's now part of the group.
Cool.
The Super Mario Galaxy movie in cinemas now. LBC. Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Next.
Hi, just these, thanks. Do you do cashback?
Just need to check you're not a robot first. New security policy.
Okay.
How many traffic lights can you see out the window?
Two?
No, that's wrong.
Right, well, obviously I'm not a robot.
That's what a robot would say.
What a load of malarkey. Smarty keeps things simple, like 80 gigabytes for £10. And on a rolling monthly SIM plan, you're free to leave any time. Less malarkey, more Smarty. Search Smarty Mobile.
The weather's warmer, the days are longer, and the savings are even better in the Hillary Spring Sale. Right now, there's up to 40% off hundreds of made-to-measure styles. Plus, get an extra 10% off everything in our flash event, including our total blackout blinds for complete darkness and a good night's sleep. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, an extra 10% off everything ends the 13th of April. Conditions apply.
This is LBC with Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973.
20 past nine on LBC. I've opened a Pandora's box with my criminal confessions. Has Nick Ferrari ever admitted to any criminal confessions, Freddie, on the show? Is this a first on Breakfast? I think he's innocent of all crimes, obviously. That's why he's on The Breakfast Show and I'm not. John in Newton Le Willow says, I hope the C90s you pilfered were decent TDK ADs or Maxwell 2s. Yes, I'm 63 too, says John. But I think they were actually TDKs. Right, we are going to take a few calls on this now. So how can we solve the shoplifting crisis if this is the attitude of a lot of our big businesses? Paul is in Leicester. Hello, Paul.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Morning, good, thank you. What would you like to say? Good.
So I run 3 convenience stores in the East Midlands, and I've instructed my team, don't tackle it, because their welfare is more important to me than a bar of chocolate. But then we log it with a photograph, crime record and that. But even logging it is not easy, because each force has a different setup, and it can take up to an hour. And my team's attitude is, what's the point of logging it? Because the police don't do nothing. We have totally decriminalised this whole institution of theft. It's
yeah,
now...
but you've been a part of it.
Sorry?
You're a part of it.
Yeah, I know, but the thing is, no one's doing anything about it. You know, the crime is unpunished. No one cares enough. The government allowed this to happen. And I get the police resources are tied. I understand that, and I support that. Until the government actually take a stance and say, right, look, you know, enough is enough. I mean, last week I ended up getting 3 points for doing 4 miles over the limit. But yeah, I get 10,000, 20,000 pounds worth of stock next year. Mm. So, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, my I sped. I agree. I'm over the limit and I went 4 miles over the speed limit. And yeah, I do deserve the 3 points. But hold on, I'm getting 30,000, 40,000 pounds worth of mixed stock a year, but no one cares. You know, and that's coming out of my pocket where I can't employ more people, improve my shop, you know, and it just becomes a no-win battle. And, you know, this is money that they're stealing from families that have got mortgages on their businesses. They work 12, 30. I mean, I did 16 hours yesterday myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm doing probably 14 hours myself. And you know, you sometimes think, why am I doing this? Why do I bother? I used to enjoy retail, loved retail. Now it's come to a point where, you know what, I just don't enjoy my job no more.
I can completely sympathise with that. I ran a bookshop for 7 years, and if I'm honest, would I open one now? No, there are many reasons for that. Some of them covered in the last hour, but this would be part of it. And I can remember I had to tackle, well, it wasn't a shoplifter as such. Some guy, I think he'd been on the sauce at lunchtime, and he came in the shop, and we had masks of politicians in the window, and there was one of Neil Kinnock, and he literally reached into the window and grabbed the mask. He wasn't going to nick it. I think he just wanted to show it to his mates. And I said, mate, can you just put that back? And he thumped me in the mouth.
So you can't even name and shame these people on any, you know, Facebook or anything like that, you know. And you know, everyone knows who's at it because they tend to be the same people. And, you know, when they come in the door, we kick them out now. But, you know, even then, it's like, what are you going to do about it, mate? There's nothing you can do about it. The law's on my side. It's not on your side. These people know that we can't do nothing about it and the police won't do anything about it either.
Mm.
And that's the challenge you've got. Society has become so unkind to each other. It's unbelievable. People don't even open the door, say please, thank you no more. We've become animals. And I don't understand why. You know, we're here only one go in life. Why hurt each other? Why do this to each other? I get there's a shortage of money. I get cost of living. I understand all that. I'm not naive to it. But I'd rather you come in and say to me, look, have you got any spare? I mean, we give away a lot of our food that's going out of date, you know, in the evening. We've got regulars that come in and say, right, have you got anything for us today? And we give it to them. I'd rather you come in and say, look, you know what? Can you help me out here?
Yeah. Paul, I do sympathise. Thank you very much indeed for your call. Somebody's spreading a vicious rumour here. Karen says, James O'Brien attempted to steal Kings of the Wild Frontier by Adam Ants from Woolworths. What a terrible accusation to make. I think I do recall him saying that himself, to be fair. What What kind of people are LBC employing nowadays? I don't know. Now, we'll come back to shoplifting in a moment, but I want to talk about fat jabs, because I've got some personal experience of this. I'm on the Mounjaro. It's having a little bit of an effect, not as fast as I think I'd like, but then I'm not on a high dose. But the growing popularity of fat jabs is expected to increase Britain's divorce rate as slimmed down partners look for new love. Am I looking for new love? Am I about to be divorced from my partner? Well, I hadn't thought of that until I read this story. It has to be said. Honey Lancaster James is consultant psychologist and broadcaster and joins me now. Honey, is this a real phenomenon?
Well, good morning, Ian. I think the first thing to say is it's not the jabs that are going to cause divorce. This comes from research that shows that any kind of rapid weight loss can sometimes increase the rate of kind of relationship breakdown. So some researchers in Sweden in an article have said that they estimate it's about 50% more chance if you've gone through rapid weight loss. So this is where this is coming from. And I think we also need to say as well that this is kind of, you know, correlational kind of research and analysis, nothing kind of formal yet. But I do think there are some things at play that can affect relationships. And that is really due to multiple factors, one of which I think is that obviously when people have been troubled by their weight, often their confidence will go up when they do lose a lot of weight, and that can lead to quite a lot of lifestyle changes. So they might start going out more, they might go for that new job, they might join something that they didn't before, and all of those things of course increase the kind of opportunities for meeting new people, building confidence in general. And if you were in a relationship that already was perhaps struggling, or perhaps it wasn't the relationship you necessarily wanted, but you didn't have the confidence to get out there or whatever, that can be one of the things that can happen. You essentially just find yourself moving in new circles and doing new things, and that kind of thing can lead to new relationships. But I think there's also other things at play as well. There can be increased conflict in relationships when one partner changes dramatically, whether that's weight loss or anything else. Some partners can feel that they're being sort of, you know, that their relationship is under threat, and that can lead to anxiety, stress, conflict. They might feel like they might be left behind or fear abandonment, and that can then increase conflict. And again, very much depending on how that couple functions, whether they move through stress and change together and support each other, or whether they tend to sort of turn on each other and feel threatened and bring that into the relationship. So there are a lot of things going on.
So basically it's not all about sort of the visual appearance of somebody. For example, a friend of mine went down from 23 stone to 14, and it transformed his appearance much for the better, I have to say. But he met his wife when he was 23 stone, and she quite obviously fancied a bit of a chunky monkey. I've never had this discussion with him, so I'm just surmising. But I mean, he might have feared that if he lost all that weight, she might not fancy him anymore.
Well, I think any kind of major change creates fear in terms of, you know, what might my partner think. But I think we have to be careful there not to equate, say, being overweight with being unattractive, because that's not necessarily the case at all. And it's not necessarily the case for everyone at all. So that, I don't think, is the biggest factor here. I think it's much more likely to be that someone who is approaching a major lifestyle change, it affects almost everything. It'll affect the way they conduct their everyday life. They might be exercising more or less, conversely, or they might be, changing their eating habits or not wanting to go here or there, which the couple did together before. So there might end up being a lifestyle mismatch. I think the thing about physical attraction can be, there can be an impact there, particularly if it's affected somebody's intimacy in their life from confidence or something like that, and suddenly those things change, then there might be an impact on kind of, you know, sexual attraction within the relationship or intimacy, frequency, those kinds of things. But again, these things can move both ways. It could lead to a greater desire for intimacy because of greater confidence and so on, or it could lead to less desire for intimacy, perhaps because of rapid weight loss and the change in your body. You know, you might not feel confident in your skin for a while. These things are not cut and dry. And really, it all comes down to the same thing, which is that any major lifestyle change or shift in your identity, your confidence, your lifestyle habits, those are the sort of touch points, those are the tension points, if you like, in any relationship. And it's how you navigate that between you, really, that predicts, you know, what's going to happen.
Thank you very much indeed. That's Honey Lancaster James, a consultant psychologist and broadcaster. I just buzzed Freddie and said, has Nick Ferrari ever said Chunky Monkey on his show? And he said no, but he has said Twinks and Bears. I dread to think what that phone in was, but there we are. Obviously one I missed. Right, we're going to be talking about more about shoplifting in a moment. Lots of calls coming in on that. Plus, apparently more people are buying electric vehicles because of the soaring fuel price costs. It's 9:31 on LBC News Headlines with Dominic Ellis.
A senior Iranian official has confirmed that Tehran has received a two-tier ceasefire plan, which is being reviewed. Iran has also said it won't reopen the Strait of Hormuz in exchange for a temporary pause in fighting with the United States. The government says changes to the benefits system from today will help millions of workers. They include the right to statutory sick pay from the first day of illness and the scrapping of the two-child benefit cap. And ahead of the start of a walkout by resident doctors in England tomorrow, the NHS is urging people not to put off seeking care. They're striking for 6 days in their dispute over pay and jobs. LBC weather, a settled day for large parts of the country. Staying dry with sunny spells, a high of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
Bowser is back!
Everyone calm down. The Super Mario Brothers can take care of the kingdom. Let's go.
This April.
Code, pack our things.
Woohoo!
The galaxy.
Whoa.
Is waiting.
Who is this? Special. So some cool dinosaur just shows up and he's now part of the group.
Cool.
The Super Mario Galaxy movie. In cinemas now.
The team of business experts at Currys Business can help you find the right tech for your business at the right price. From laptops and mobiles to software and large appliances, plus installation and support, we go above and beyond because you do too. For business tech solutions that save you time and money, visit your local business hub in-store or go online. Currys Business. Tech for business. Powered by people.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
The label.
Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
9:34. In 15 minutes' time, we will be talking about the magic faraway tree. Jill says, "Morning, Ian. The magic faraway tree was my favourite book, together with The Wishing Chair." Don't know that one. Just been up in the loft and found my very battered first Australian edition, dated 1948. Going to see the film this week. Well, I imagine that might be worth a bit of money if it's a first edition. Right, back to your calls on shoplifting first, though. George is in Wimbledon. Hello, George.
Did you say shoplifting?
Oh, sorry. I am so sorry.
I've never shoplifted. We can talk about that.
I didn't look at my screen properly. It does say weight loss here, so I'm not going to throw Freddie under the bus. It's me who should be thrown under the bus.
No. Listen, I've been listening to you for years, and it's such a joy for the first time to talk to you. I love listening to you.
Well, thank you very much.
I've lost 3 stone on Manjaro in the last year, and my husband, don't think he likes it. I think it's changed the dynamic of the relationship. Now, we've got a very solid relationship, so we're not going to spit out. But as soon as I started to look better...
Well, you say that. He may think something different.
Oh, God, I hadn't thought of that.
Sorry to burst your bubble.
He's not even in the country. Maybe he's off with Eduardo or something. I don't know. But he's always been the ripped... sort of, you know, naturally thin, and I've always battled weight, and he said some things that make me, and I said to him, you preferred me when I was fat, didn't you? You somehow liked me being in that place, and now I'm able to wear your clothes. And he said to me the other day, why are you wearing my jacket? And I said, because it looks good on me. He said, yeah, but it's a medium. I said, yeah, I'm thin now. And he keeps saying to me, as I was losing the weight, he started saying, okay, that's enough now. You've lost too much. You started, and I'd say, Saeed, I'm a 28 BMI still. I've not lost too much. I'm still big. But as I got thinner and thinner, and I think more confident, and I've got a whole new wardrobe, and I love going out, and my friends comment and see it. And I'm not saying he isn't happy for me, but it has changed that dynamic somewhat.
So that really feeds into the whole point of the story that we covered, doesn't it? I mean, in a way, I mean, you obviously feel better about yourself, I guess. You've got more confidence, more body confidence. But it sounds from reading between the lines that you're now thinking, well, maybe I should stop it and go back a bit.
Well, he wants me to stop it. And I'm managing it because I do exercise a lot. I run 4 or 5 times a week. And so I'm now weaning off the Manjaro, and hopefully I can maintain the weight loss. But I'm 82 kilos now, and I was 98. And he keeps saying, I'm in the park with my dog.
You've got a dog called Derek?
Yes.
What
the
kind?
The rescue home called him that. He's half German Shepherd and half Hungarian Sheepdog, and he's a darling. But the dog friend called him Derek. Yes, and he keeps saying to me, I think you should go back up to about 88, 90 kilos. And I say, Saeed, I'd be unhealthy again. Why would you want that? And I just don't know whether there's an element of jealousy or he just preferred to be the sort of fit, ripped one and me the fatty. I don't know.
Well, we'll leave that to people to decide. George, good luck with that. Thank you very much indeed for a very entertaining call. Now, high petrol prices triggered by the Iran war and cheaper electricity tariffs for home charging have contributed to an increase in interest from motorists wanting to switch to electric vehicles. Well, we covered this story earlier in the programme when I was joined by Anna McDonald, investment manager at Aubrey Capital Management, for our regular roundup of the world of business. She told me about some of the reasons why an increase number of Brits might be tempted to go electric.
It's also driven by another aspect, which is that the cost of overnight home charging has fallen to as low as 3.5 pence per kilowatt hour. Now, that's because of something actually quite ironic. It's that ministers have scrapped green levies or basically moved them into general taxation. So it's now much cheaper to charge a car overnight. And so that makes them look more attractive for those drivers who are in the position where they can have their own home charging point, because it does make it considerably cheaper than driving a petrol car.
Ginny Buckley is broadcaster, founder and chief executive of Electrifying.com, a multi-channel media platform helping consumers seek jargon-free advice about the switch to electric cars. Ginny, very good morning. So is this trend real now? Sort of since the Iran war started and fuel prices are going up, is that a real shift to EVs?
Good morning, Ian. Yeah, I'm not sure if I can top your previous caller. That was a fabulous call,
It'll be a challenge.
I very much enjoyed listening to that.
Do you have a dog? Look, and what's it called?
I have a dog called Ziggy, and he is a black cocker spaniel. He's not with me at the moment because I'm parked up in my electric car. So, yeah, he's very sweet, though.
Okay, back on message.
Right, electric cars. So, yes, it's very much a real trend. We've seen an uplift in traffic to the website since the start of the war, a 50% uplift week on week in traffic, in people coming, looking for advice. And we're seeing that in both reviews of the electric cars, but also in all the ownership guides and all the explainers about how much range you really need and how to charge a car. So we're definitely seeing that.
Because it is a different experience. Okay, it's still a car, but you have to drive it in a very different way and plan things more than you would for a normal fuel car.
You do, Ian, absolutely. And we do a big piece of research every year with the AA, together with the AA. And we did the most recent one at the end of last year. We talked to around 13,000 UK drivers who aren't currently EV drivers. And it's really interesting. Around 50% still tell us that they don't feel as confident at the prospect of driving and charging an electric car. And that's because it is, you're making new habits. And we don't like to do that. But, you know, if you've been filling your car up with fuel at the petrol station for years, it can seem a bit daunting. And they can feel different to drive. The reality is that once you do start to own one and run one, you very quickly slip into those new habits. But we know it can be daunting for people.
What about the fuel costs? I mean, the electricity costs, because obviously your electricity bill is going to go up, and it's very important to make sure that you get the right tariff, isn't it? And I've got a text here from Dean in Kent, who say, "Morning, Ian. With reference to the electric charging, I have an electric vehicle, but good luck anybody finding a company that's offering a decent price for EV tariffs for new customers. I certainly can't find one."
Yeah, we've seen we track the tariffs regularly. You know, we have updates all the time on the website, and our tariff tracking, we have one of our team that does that. They are absolutely up in the air at the moment. So even as an EV driver, it is very hard to get those off-peak deals at the minute. We strongly suspect that that's going to settle down. We've been talking to the energy companies, and those deals will start to come back. But even if you're charging on the standard off-gem rate, if you're driving around 8,500 miles a year in your electric vehicle, you'll still be paying around £517 per year, and that's on the standard rate. If you compare that with a similar electric car, we did the comparisons with a VW Golf and a VW ID3, which are very similar. If you compare that £517 to the pump prices, this was a week or so ago, you'd be closer to £900. So even on those standard tariffs, you will still pay substantially less. If you can get on one of those off-peak tariffs, then that will drop substantially. You know, it's dropped to around £150 a year for your fuel costs. So it's worth hanging on, and it's worth keep checking what's going on with the tariffs.
And your website carries all the details that people need to know about whether to buy an EV or not, and all the pitfalls, all the advantages. It's at electrifying.com. Ginny, thank you very much indeed for talking to us. Somebody here says, "I've got a sheep called Derek." Claire in Anglesey. Well, who knew? Right, let's go to Jean in Bromley, who does indeed want to talk about shoplifting. Hello, Jean.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call. Security guards are not allowed, according to you and to other supermarkets, all supermarkets, if the security guards aren't allowed to approach shoplifters, I'd be very interested to see what their job description is. I mean, what on earth are they there for? Do they just sort of stand at the door and help old ladies out with their shopping? Or, you know, I mean, I thought the word security meant keeping staff and customers secure and stock. What exactly is their job description if they're not allowed? What are they there for?
It's a bit like saying that a nightclub bouncer shouldn't be able to eject anybody from a nightclub in case they might punch them.
Yeah. I mean, to me, what are they for? What is their job?
Well, look, I'm with you. I don't understand it. And look, I understand why employers are reticent to say to their employees, OK, yeah, feel free to tackle people. But in the end, it's surely got to be up to the individual member of staff to make a judgment as to whether they are... I mean, like, if I was in a shop and I'm 6'3", sort of 16 stone and a bit, in fact, quite a bit, I'm more likely to be able to tackle someone than a sort of 7 stone sort of... I'm just going to say weakling, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I mean,
I totally agree with what you're saying, and I agree that they shouldn't involve themselves in case they get stabbed and things like that. But the other side of the coin, what exactly is their job?
Mm.
What are they supposed to do? The ones that I see in my local supermarkets just sort of hang around the doors. Open the door if you're struggling and say good morning if they know you pretty well. But apart from that, what is their job description? What are they for?
Well, if anyone wants to answer Jean's question, you've got 15 minutes to do it. Thank you very much, Jean. I think you pose a very relevant question. Coming up...
Just remember, don't go in that wood up top. Some folks say it's enchanted. Strange creatures. Filthy lives. The usual thing.
I don't know about you, but I rediscovered my copy of Magic Faraway Tree a couple of years ago, and I read a chapter of it, and the memories that it brought back, it was as if I was sort of in my childhood reimagining the Enchanted Wood and all the different characters in that brilliant book by Enid Blyton. Well, it's now out as a major feature film. I went to see it last night. We're going to be talking about it in just a minute and taking more of your calls on shoplifting, EVs, anything you like. It's 9:46. Dominic Ellis has the news headlines.
A senior Iranian official has confirmed that Tehran has received a 2-tier ceasefire plan, which is now being reviewed. The government says changes to the benefits system from today will help millions of workers. And ahead of the start of a walkout by resident doctors in England tomorrow, the NHS is urging people not to put off seeking care. LBC weather, a settled day for large parts of the UK, staying dry with sunny spells, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Embarking Ripple Road is closed eastbound at Stag Island. It's following an accident that happened late last night and the investigation works are still taking place. On the South Circular Road, the traffic lights aren't working at Putney High Street, so definitely do expect delays. There are restrictions at the junction now with no right turn from all approaches. On the trains, Avanti West Coast and London North Western aren't going to and from Euston again today from Milton Keynes, and that's because of the engineering works to the West Coast mainline, which also means that the Lioness line is suspended between Euston and Wealdstone Junction. And there's also no Bakerloo line running between Stonebridge Park and Harrow and Wealdstone.
Coming up at 10, Ben Kentish, leading Britain's conversation. Next on LBC.
Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Morrison to Lidl and saving £41 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/you save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands, and your fresh 5 a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value. Prices check 26th of the 3rd, 26. Morrison's also sell other products. See online for more details.
At Wix, the Home and Garden event is now on. Save on Dulux Standard 2.5 litre coloured emulsion. Was £24, now £16. Shop today. Terms apply.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
Way up here, right at the edge of oxygen, in space, that's where you'll find us. O2 Satellite keeps you connected in more places than ever before. So even when you're far from everything, you won't have to miss a thing. Introducing O2 Satellite. O2, essential for living.
30-day rolling add-on, £3 per month, device type, app, location and other restrictions apply. See odo.co.uk/terms.
How about Specsave ears?
Not sure.
Do you get it? Specsave ears?
Yeah, but no.
Oh, okay. Specs, and we also do hearing two savers.
Think about it. Should have gone to Specs and we also do hearing two savers. Can't see it catching on.
Okay, so we're saying Specsavers do eyes and ears. Senses savers.
Technically true.
Yeah.
But actually terrible.
Oh.
At Specsavers, we're hearing experts too, and have been for over 20 years.
Oh, should we just stick to Specsavers then?
Yeah.
Book a free hearing check today.
Ian Dale on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
9:49, Sandra says, I'm in my late 60s and loved reading Enid Blyton books as a child. I went to see The Magic Faraway Tree on my own last week and thoroughly enjoyed it. I came out of the cinema feeling I'd just seen a feel-good movie. P.S. I thought Jennifer Saunders was hilarious. I'll tell you what, that was acting. I mean, Jennifer Saunders, I thought, was brilliant in it because there was no hint of the normal sort of Jennifer Saunders slightly chaotic character in it. She was absolutely marvellous. Anyway, more on that in just a few moments' time, but let's take a call from Tom in Manchester on shoplifting. Tom, hi, what would you like to say?
Good morning. Thanks very much for taking my call. It's appreciated. It was just regarding the last caller. So I'm a loss prevention manager for a well-known home retailer, and we do detain people for theft. We don't wear a uniform, we wear our own clothes, so we blend in with people in the shop. And we do detain people for theft and go for prosecution every time, so we have a zero tolerance on it.
But is that typical of other companies as well in your sector?
Some companies have started to come back to being able to detain people. It's not actually, it's policy-wise and how it looks for businesses is the reason why a lot of retailers don't do it. Which it's a shame, really, because we put a lot of time and effort in. And, yeah, when we detain a repeat offender and other companies just don't bother, it is frustrating for us. And we do get a good response from the police. So I'm not really a bad word to say about them on the theft side of things. So they are really good with us.
I'm getting a lot of texts from people saying, who are working in your retail sector, they're saying, well, security guards provide visual deterrence. And I'm thinking, what a load of old rubbish that is. Because if people see a security guard, but they know that the security guard isn't going to do anything to stop them nicking things, they'll still nick things, won't they?
Yeah, 100%. And this is why we wear our own clothes. We don't wear a uniform or with security on it. We just dress as a normal person, walk around the store and follow people and detain them if they steal.
Tom, great call. Thank you. Let's go to Steve in Hampstead. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Ian. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. What a fine mess this government has got us into regarding this shoplifting.
Hang on a second. Look, I'm as critical as this government as anybody, but I think to blame them when they've only been in power for only about 18, 19 months for the shoplifting epidemic is a bit off, isn't it?
Well, not just them, the Tories as well, with the austerity. And I'll start at the very beginning. When I started in the police, we went to every single shoplifter, everyone, whether nothing was done, nobody was arrested, maybe they were given a banning order, maybe other items were found in them, which resulted in other offences and houses being searched and stuff like that. There was a knock-on effect turning up to a shoplifter, and maybe other offences were apparent. What's happening now is, with the police cuts, the government now are prioritising, as we know. And what's happening is the government is trying to force all retailers now to deal with civil recovery and to deal with it in-house. And this will become more apparent in the future when we have artificial intelligent cameras put in supermarkets, because half the job of the police will be done because they'll be able to refuse persistent shoplifters coming into the store. The government know this. But in the meantime, there's chaos, as we've seen with the shoplifters. Unfortunately, you know, anybody can detain the shoplifter, even a member of the public. And this incident the other day with the guy who has been sacked from his job, as you said, I hope he's got a very clear case of unfair dismissal, because under common law powers, you can detain somebody for what happened. And I hope this comes out. But it doesn't make it right. What happens is, as I said, it's all about protecting the image, not protecting the theft, if that makes sense. Because they've got, as your last caller said, they've got an image to protect. and it goes on to other companies as well, police, the NHS, they've all got an image to protect, so they don't want to be seen to be heavy-handed with people because it's bad press. But this isn't going to stop overnight. There's going to be a couple of years, I think, until these AI cameras come in, you'll see a massive change. But until then, the government know there's chaos with the prioritising and the police not attending. And it's going to be damaging, because if the police don't attend these shoplifters, name checks have to be done. And we've seen what happened a few years ago in Nottingham when that guy killed those three people. Now, imagine this person was wanted for a serious offence. He's got caught shoplifting. The store wants to deal with it as civil recovery. Bye-bye. Lets him go. No name check done. And we've seen what's happened when somebody's wanted.
OK, Steve, thank you very much indeed. Now, The Magic Faraway Tree was a very popular book in the 50s, 60s and 70s. It may well still be, for all I know. It had a great effect on my childhood, because I can remember reading it. And you imagine the scenes that Enid Blyton is writing about. And it just sort of fuels your imagination in a way that I don't think that many books have ever done since. I mean, Harry Potter, I think, for more recent generations, I think probably fulfilled the same thing. Let's just hear a little bit from the soundtrack.
Dear Grandma, we've moved to the countryside. Dad's crazy plan is infecting the whole family.
I feel like their childhood is slipping away. Polly, the kids need this.
Just remember, don't go in that wood up top. Some folks say it's enchanted. Strange creatures. Filthy lions. You have the usual things.
I wouldn't say that was very usual.
Whoa! Mummy!
What is this place?
The Magic Faraway Tree.
Stephen Armstrong, arts journalist at The Observer, joins me now. Stephen, I went to see it last night. I think you've seen it too. How did it stick to the plot of the original book, or how far did it stick to the plot?
Well, not really. I think the principle of the book is there. The idea, as anyone who's read the book will know, is that there are some kids who go to the country. They come across a faraway tree which has a collection of inhabitants: Silky, Mr. Moonface, the Saucepan Man, Mr. What's His Name. Wonderful names. And it's a very dreamy book. The thing about the book is there's not a meta plot. There's not an arc, really, until the very end when a bunch of goblins attack. So there's not really a story to the book, apart from a lot of really, you know, amazing things that the kids encounter. So as a film, that's quite weak because nothing much happens. So they've created a story with Andrew Garfield and Claire Foy as the parents, who don't really appear very much in the book. The mum basically packs up lashings of ginger beer and stuff for the kids.
There's no ginger beer in this, is there?
No, ginger beer. And so she works for a tech company. She's fired for not spying on people. And so the film becomes a kind of should kids have Wi-Fi in school sort of movie. It's they go to the countryside. There is no Wi-Fi. It's a constant joke all the way through, the absence of Wi-Fi in the countryside. One of the kids in particular is very tech gadget obsessed. And so you have this sense that the faraway tree's job is to bring them back to their innocence and their childhood. Again, as everybody who's read the book will know, at the top of the tree, there are these rotating lands, the land of birthdays, the land of goodies and so forth. And they're sort of there, mostly there. There's a dynamic end plot, which is very, very different to the book, to do with the idea being they've made a series. Maybe I shouldn't actually go into that because it's a little bit spoilery in case anyone's going to go and watch it. But there is a conclusion to the narrative, and there is a thrilling conclusion to the narrative, which is not the same as the thrilling conclusion to the narrative in the book.
There have been accusations that it's a little bit woke. I mean, Mr. Moonface is played by somebody who's not white, and I mean, I think actually still encapsulates the character. While the older child, I think, is a little bit feminist, which you wouldn't get in an Enid Blyton book.
But, yeah.
And Jennifer Saunders' character, I mean, was, I thought, magnificent. I mean, that is worthy of a BAFTA, I think.
I think it's cheap. I think the woke discussion is all getting, I think it's getting a bit, oh gosh. I was interviewing Michelle Gale recently about something. She was on EastEnders and in the 1990s, and she said when she was cast on EastEnders, it wasn't a woke casting, it was just a job for her. So, like, you know, there is a point where you go, actors are going to take a job, they're going to cast. Does it matter? Yeah. I don't think it matters. The The Jennifer Saunders character, again, isn't in the book, but really strong, almost acts as a counterpoint to the Mrs. in the original Slap, who runs a school in the clouds. But even as early as, I think, the 70s was changed to Mrs. Snap because corporal punishment was no longer practiced in schools. There were changes to the book that have been made throughout time. So the original characters, of course, were called Dick, Fanny and Bessie. And, well, the second character of the book was called Dick, Fanny and Bessie, and they changed that because that acquired a different interpretation later on in life. So there have constantly been re-evaluations of this book as certain things have become a little bit recent.
Stephen, time has beaten us, but it is a fantastic film. I'd urge anybody to go and see it, particularly if you want to take kids to the cinemas. That's Stephen Armstrong from The Observer. Thank you all very much, and thanks for your company on Breakfast over the last 4 days. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Coming up at one, it's Sheila Fogarty, but right now, someone who's never heard of the Magic Faraway Tree. Shame on you.
Guilty
ben
as charged,
Kentish.
Ian, I'm afraid.
Dear.
Clearly beyond before my time. Thank you very much, Ian. Have a lovely Easter Monday. Hello and a very, very good morning indeed to you this sunny Monday Easter. More concerns have been raised this morning about Donald Trump's mental stability after an expletive-filled rant on social media about, yep, you guessed it, the war in Iran. Trump's use of the F-bomb, far from the typical language of an incumbent US president, fueling further concerns that the most powerful man in the world might have completely lost the plot. But with new reports this morning that a ceasefire deal between the US and Iran is now on the table, less than a day after that threat-filled post about the hell that Trump was vowing to unleash, could it all been part of some sort of genius plan? And might there actually, after all, be some method in Trump's madness?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a senior Iranian official has confirmed that Tehran has received a ceasefire plan which could end its war with the US. Iran says it won't be pressured into deadlines and won't reopen the Strait of Hormuz as part of any temporary ceasefire. President Trump has threatened to blow up Iranian power plants and bridges if the strait isn't reopened by tomorrow. Defence analyst Professor Michael Clark is doubtful that the ceasefire proposal put forward by Pakistan will amount to anything.
My guess would be that this proposal won't consist of all that much from the American point of view. I mean, President Trump is looking for a way out, and I think he'll settle for forms of words which won't stand too much scrutiny, but will be enough to get him out to declare victory and leave. That's clearly what he wants to do.
NHS England is urging patients not to put off seeking care ahead of a 6-day walkout by resident doctors tomorrow. Officials say people should attend planned appointments unless they've been contacted to reschedule. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has called the strike action disappointing. A fifth person has been arrested on suspicion of murder over the death of a pedestrian killed in a crash in Barnsley. 45-year-old Liam Green died after being hit by a car in Cudworth on Friday. A 53-year-old man was arrested on Sunday and remains in police custody for questioning. A host of benefits and the state pension are rising from today as the new financial year begins. It means millions of people receiving universal credit or a state pension will see their payments increase. The two-child benefit cap has also been scrapped from today. LBC's Thomas Watts has more.
The cap was first introduced by the Conservatives in 2017, limiting child tax credit and universal credit to the first two children in most households. In November, the Chancellor announced it would be abolished while outlining her budget, following months of pressure from Labour backbenchers. But the Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, said the decision favoured benefit claimants over working people.
A second sponsor has pulled out of London's Wireless Festival. Diageo's followed Pepsi after Kanye West was announced as the headliner this summer. Anger's growing over the booking following the rapper's previous anti-Semitic remarks and use of Nazi imagery. West apologised earlier this year and blamed a bipolar episode. LBC weather, a settled day for large parts of the UK, staying dry with sunny spells, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Need anything from Tesco? Like a delicious whole leg of lamb? Or a
succulent large beef roasting joint. Now, even better than half price this Easter with your Tesco Club card. Because every little helps. Majority of larger stores and online ends 10th of April. Club card or app required. Exclusions apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
Just gone 10 o'clock. Hello there. A very, very good morning to you this Easter bank holiday Monday. Lovely to have you with us this morning. Ben Kentish here in for James O'Brien here on LBC. And my goodness, there's lots for us to get our teeth into this morning. We've got the very latest in a few minutes' time on the breaking news this morning that a ceasefire deal between the US and Iran is now on the table. And if it's agreed, big if, admittedly, the war could end for at least a month and a half. And crucially for all of us, the oil would start flowing through the Strait of Hormuz once again. More on that to come. We'll also get the quite incredible details that are emerging of the rescue of the US airman trapped behind enemy lines in Iran after his jet was struck down. Been described as one of the most audacious special forces operations in US military history. Tell you lots more about it in about half an hour's time. Then we'll talk about the Green Party later on. What's driving their surge? Is it a flash in the pan or are they here to stay? And as Keir Starmer says, Nazi supporting rapper Kanye West shouldn't be able to perform in London. Are you with the Prime Minister on that? All that to come between now and 1 o'clock. But we start today with the man behind so much of what we're set to talk about this morning. The president who has started a war that he's now scrambling around desperately trying to find a way out of. There is, isn't there, a very, very long list of adjectives that has been used to describe Donald Trump in the time that he's been in politics. Narcissist, venal, corrupt, petty, pathetic, infantile, dishonest. And those are probably some of the more polite ones that his critics use. But the one that is on the front pages of no less than three British newspapers this morning, I would say, is more concerning than all the other descriptions that have been put to Donald Trump. Because the word that is used to describe Trump's latest threats in relation to the war in Iran is unhinged. Unhinged, the front one-word headline on the front page of this morning's Daily Mirror. Unhinged, the word that The Guardian, admittedly in quote marks, uses to describe Donald Trump's ultimatum to the Iranian regime. And even the Daily Mail, far from a usual critic of the Trump regime, also using the same phrase. They talk about an unhinged president issuing a foul-mouthed ultimatum. And you can't help but conclude that that is not a far-fetched, outlandish claim anymore. That as the pressure has grown on Donald Trump domestically as well as internationally in the last few weeks, he has given the impression that the heat is getting to him in quite a serious way. We've had the repeated threats to Iran. We've had the often completely incoherent, almost always contradictory statements. We've had the furious lashing out at US allies and threats to countries like ours. And then yesterday we had Donald Trump raising the stakes even further still. In one of the most eye-opening and I would say troubling posts on his Truth Social account for really quite some time. And that is quite a contested field, I will grant you. But yesterday morning, as the war rumbled on and the prospects of peace seemed slimmer than ever, Trump, presumably tucked somewhere in the White House, picked up his phone and bashed out the following message. This is what he said. Tuesday will be power plant day and bridge day. All wrapped up in Iran. There will be nothing like it, 3! Open the effing strait, you crazy bastards, or you'll be living in hell. Just watch, capital letters, ! Praise be to Allah, DJT. And in what have you got there? 3 sentences, quite a few indications that Donald Trump has absolutely lost the plot. It wasn't just the use of the F-bomb. It's not just the slightly crazed use of capitals and punctuation marks, because that perhaps we're used to. It wasn't just the description of a foreign country as crazy, a word that I won't repeat, but generally means children born out of wedlock. It wasn't even the very odd and presumably mocking reference to praising Allah. All of that was bad, wasn't it? But not as bad as the threat to carry out a whole series of war crimes by blowing up a country's civilian energy infrastructure and leaving millions of people, schools, hospitals, whole towns and cities without power. Hence why the word unhinged is now being used more and more to describe Donald Trump. And it's not just his critics this time. MAGA favourite Marjorie Taylor Greene, who for so long was a